right, all right. Good morning, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline Studio, and we're here until 5 a.m. It's Tuesday. That means two for Tuesday. Yeah, man, two for Tuesday. Get your requests in. We'll play them later. One artist, two songs, 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. And coming up in just a couple of minutes, our good friend Jim Ryan is going to join us. He writes about music for Forbes and the Daily Herald, Chicago Now. You can follow him on Twitter at Radio Jim Ryan. He's seen a bunch of concerts, written a bunch of stuff, and met some cool people. And we always love talking music with Jim Ryan. That'll be coming up in just a few minutes. 312-981-7200 for talk and text. And you can also follow us on Twitter at Nick D Show. And Facebook is the best way to stay connected. It's facebook.com/Nick D Show. Also, later on in the show, we're going to be talking with Lindsey Cochran and Phil Angotti of Great Moments in Vinyl. Great Moments in Vinyl is Lindsey Cochran's project where he gathers together some of the best musicians in Chicago, and they pay tribute to musical artists and albums. And they're going to be paying tribute to the Moody Blues this Thursday, October 25th at Martyrs. And we'll talk all about that and talk about the Moody Blues and more. And you can check out their website at greatmomentsinvinyl.com. So Lindsey and Phil will be here a little bit later on. We are going to talk about game shows. Wheel of Fortune made some news. And, of course, we talked a little bit at the end of last week about Price is Right is coming to town, man. And the yodeling idiot will be part of the experience. So we'll talk, but we're going to talk game shows in general. What are your favorites? Which ones are the best? And all that cool stuff. And we're going to talk about being frugal on the show this morning. So, yeah, two for Tuesday. Get the requests in now at 312-981-7200. And there you go. You can also check out our podcasts. They're free. Subscribe to them. They will automatically show up in your device, and you can listen at your leisure, bro. Go to WGNRadio.com to check out all our podcasts and subscribe, you know, at iTunes and wherever else you get your podcasts. And we have a lot of people who listen to our podcasts, a lot, and we really, really appreciate that. So thanks. Let's keep it going and spread the word. All right. Let me say hello to my great producer, Dan Shugru. Hello, Dan.
Howdy, Nick.
How are you?
Good, man. How about yourself?
Good. Hey, you know, it's Jim Ryan's birthday.
I did not know that. That is fantastic.
I was flying around on the Facebook before we got on the air, and you know how they remind you of your friend's birthdays.
Yes.
Jim Ryan, right at the top of my a list of birthdays
there
today.
There we go.
He's 15.
Shouldn't be going to these shows.
Shouldn't be going to all those shows by himself, hanging out with Colonel Sanders. So anyway, that's Jim's going to be in here live. And it is a Tuesday morning. Dan, getting the two for Tuesdays are coming in already, I would imagine.
They are, yes.
All right. So and Dan will take care of that, and he will be producing the show as well. And Dan, I say this all the time, Dan, you do the best job ever. You're the best producer I've ever worked with.
Thank you very much.
And there's no question about it. And I've worked with a lot of good producers.
Nah, it's Andy. I mean,
Andrew WPHG Herman always has a special spot in my heart because he was kind of like my original producer was Tanya Davis.
Right.
Tanya Davis was my very first producer here at the show, but I worked with Andy the most, and we developed a great rapport. But
and he created a bunch of segments.
He did. Yes, he did. And now he's running around in New York. Watching Three's Company every day. So, but anyway, my thanks to Dan. He's producing. In the newsroom is Vic Vaughn. Hi, Vic.
Good morning, sir.
What's going on, buddy?
You know, I never met an old 97s fan that I didn't like, and Jim Ryan's no different. He's a stand-up guy. Happy birthday to Jim Ryan.
Yeah, I'm glad he's joining us on his birthday. That's pretty cool. He's a great guy.
Working on his birthday at 1:11 in the morning.
1 o'clock in the morning. The guy, you know, should be out celebrating, and he's going to be here with us.
That's what he is.
I wonder what he's going to do. Guy. Maybe he'll probably do something tonight. So to celebrate his birthday, because we're only an hour and 11 minutes into his birthday.
Right. That's right.
So Vic's in the newsroom covering everything we need to know in the newsroom, and we're here until 5 a.m. and you're with us. So stay tuned. Jim Ryan's going to join us to talk music. We'll talk about the Moody Blues with members of the Great Moments in Vinyl group. Game shows are going to be a topic. Being frugal is going to be a topic. And throughout the morning, we'll take your calls and your texts at 312-981-7200, which is also the number where you should send in your Two for Tuesday requests. So get those in. All right. Why don't we take a break here, and we'll bring in Jim Ryan. Jim Ryan has been waiting in the PPG Paints green room. And we love the PPG Paints green room. It's also really decorated all Halloween-y. It's the scary PPG Paints green room. Ooh. I hope Jim's not terrified because he had to sit there and wait. So Dan's going to go grab him from the PPG Paints green room, and Jim Ryan is going to be in studio with us right after we break. All right, welcome back, everybody. How you doing? It's Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, 2 for Tuesday. Yeah, man. Get your one artist, two songs requests in now. We'll play them later. 312-981-7200. That's also the phone number for text and talk if you have any comments or questions. Lindsey Cochran, Phil Angotti of Great Moments in Vinyl are going to join us later on to talk about their tribute to the Moody Blues, which is happening Thursday at Martyrs. That's coming up. We're going to talk game shows as well and much more. 312-981-7200. And our guest right now writes about music for Forbes, the Daily Herald, Chicago Now, reports with us every few weeks. We love having Jim in, and he is fresh from the PPG Paints green room. It's Jim Ryan. Hi, Jim.
Hi, Nick. How are you?
I'm well. Was it scary in the PPG Paints green room?
Yeah, the paint fumes always, you know, by the time I get in here, have gotten to my head a little bit.
Well, they got skeletons hanging from the ceiling now, and spiders and witches and stuff.
It's a little spooky, yeah.
Yeah, a little scary. A little scary.
Seasonal. Yeah. Festive.
Well, welcome back.
Thank you.
How you been?
Good. Can't complain.
Yeah?
Yeah.
You know, you were, as again, we'd like to remind people that you were the very first guest we had live in this studio.
I'm still honored by that.
when we moved over to 303 Wacker, you were our first live guest in studio.
So, I will take that honor.
That's awesome. So, been busy. Lots of music.
As always,
we were talking off the air that you did not come straight from the Phil Collins concert, From this past night here at the United. He played the United Center?
He sold out the United Center. tickets on StubHub were $200 tonight to get in the door.
You're kidding.
A hot ticket, Phil Collins.
People are going to pay $200 to see Phil Collins?
Yep.
the guy's been around a long time. He hasn't toured either. That's the thing.
That's
he has not toured in a very, very long time.
That is it.
My question is, did he do Easy Lover?
I don't know if he did Easy Lover, but he was doing all the 80s fare.
Because, you know, you can't really do Easy Lover. Philip Bailey's not there.
If I'm not mistaken, he's sitting in a chair on stage.
Phil Collins?
He's in bad shape.
Oh, is he really?
Physically, yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, he was on Kimmel, he was on Fallon not too long ago, and did In the Air Tonight with the Roots, and I believe he had a cane.
Oh, no, I didn't know that. Yeah, now I feel bad. I was making fun of the guy.
His back, I think, from all the drumming, he's had all kinds of surgeries.
Yeah.
I think he's in bad shape physically, but supposedly he sounds great. So.
Okay. All right. Well, now I feel bad. I feel bad mocking the guy. I didn't know he had some physical issues.
Yeah.
I wasn't aware of that. Well, that's good for him then. He's out touring,
seriously.
Right? That's pretty great.
It's pretty crazy.
And he sells out the United Center?
Yeah.
Well, now I'm a Phil Collins fan. You know, I never hate Phil Collins. You know, I saw Phil Collins, actually.
I was going to say, those are words I never expected to
I saw Phil Collins. Someone gave me a ticket. Somebody was like, hey, you want to go? And this was when it was at Poplar Creek. And this was when No Jacket Required was like the biggest album on the planet.
Okay.
And it was we were in the lawn. And it was packed, and he just played all the hits. You know, he played a few Genesis songs and stuff.
And then I heard this morning that there's a Chicago connection to No Jacket Required.
Oh, yeah, there was a restaurant.
At the pump room at the Ambassador
East?
Yeah. I had no idea of this until I heard this
morning.
Yeah,
that's where, because a jacket was required at the pump room.
And Phil didn't have one.
He didn't have one. And so he was, you know, maybe they'll provide you with one at a fancy restaurant.
Right, sure.
You know, they'll give you one. Or in the case of the movie Top Secret, they'll give you an entire tux. Have you ever seen the movie Top Secret?
Is that Bobcat Goldthwait?
No.
Val Kilmer. Val Kilmer, yes.
It's the Zucker Brothers and Abrams.
I haven't seen it in
it
a long, long time.
It is brilliantly funny. And it's my I like it more than Airplane. I think it's the funniest movie they've ever made. It's certainly the weirdest. But he goes into a restaurant, and they're like, "We require a jacket, but we can provide you with one." But then you see him in the background, in very Zucker Brothers form. There's jokes, obviously, in every part of the frame of the screen.
Sure.
That you have to watch out for. There's a lot of weird visual gags. And so while another character is talking in the foreground, in the background, they've got a tailor who's measuring stuff, the inseam.
Right.
He's in his underwear, and give him, and then he comes out, and he's got a tux on. They give him a full-on tux. So, but anyway, yeah, it does go back to a Chicago connection. That's where that name comes from.
I had no idea that that was the story on that.
I remember when Weird Al took over MTV.
Oh, yes.
There was
LTV
time,
was fantastic.
LTV,
yes.
Yeah, of course, because it's Weird Al. And
his birthday today as well.
Birthday with Weird Al.
And Johnny Carson.
And Johnny Carson.
It's pretty good company,
good
right?
Good Lord, man. Wow. I got George W. Bush.
I can't win them all.
And
Nick.
Sylvester Stallone.
Okay, yeah. Sly. That's good.
Yeah, that's not bad. Actually, yeah. I got some good celebrities that I share my birthday with. That I'm Frida Kahlo.
Okay.
I'm trying to remember now. Who else? Oh, Janet Leigh.
Okay.
So yeah,
not bad.
Yeah, not bad. But I don't know, man. That's Weird Al and Johnny Carson.
Yeah.
But I remember when Weird Al did Al TV.
Oh yeah.
And it was right around that time, you know, in the '80s.
Sure.
When Phil Collins was like really big, where he brought out the album cover to No Jacket Required, and then held up a picture of Charlie Brown and said, "Look, same people, same guys." And if you look at the album cover to No Jacket Required,
picture, yes,
Phil Collins looks like Charlie Brown.
That silhouette of his head, and that's it. Yeah.
And just a little tuft of hair on top. he looks like Charlie, and of course, Weird Al points that out, and it's genius because it's Weird Al. wasn't the name of his album with Fat called Even Worse?
Yeah, I believe so.
Because it was bad. Because his Michael Jackson's album was bad. So his was even worse. He's a genius.
I love Weird Al.
Oh, come
Weird Al should be in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, by the way.
Well, you know,
I've talked to him about that.
Have you?
He's very modest about it, but I think he should be in.
Well, why don't we talk about the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame? Because when the announcement was made for the nominees,
we did talk
at length about it, and there are some that I think that deserve to be nominated, and some that deserve to be inducted.
And some that are on there strictly to garner the fan vote.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's their thing now.
And you can continue to vote through, Dan, remember the date? It's in November, right? You can continue to vote through November.
That sounds right, because they're announcing the winners in December, and then the ceremony's February.
Yeah, and then it'll air a couple of weeks later on HBO. As they always do. Once again, you know, off the ballot, and this is every year. I just get angrier and angrier. No Warren Zevon, and that just I can't even understand that he's never been on the ballot.
And then I was thinking that it's possible, likely, maybe even I think Def Leppard's leading the fan voting right now, which is not real surprising.
Yeah,
Bon Jovi taking that once, Journey taking that, but Def Leppard and Bon Jovi specifically. Into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame before something like Iron Maiden's even nominated. That's kind of amazing.
There's a lot of...
metal is traditionally scorned
by them. It is. Jethro Tull's never been nominated.
I don't think. I don't know on Jethro Tull, but
Motorhead's not in.
Took Sabbath forever.
Yep. No, you're right. You're right. Heavy metal doesn't get the kind of respect it deserves.
It's ridiculous. Yeah. Deep Purple finally in, I think.
Purple's in, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, they are. Finally. But, you know, the ones that we were talking about here, and... when I looked at the nominees, I was, how the hell is Todd Rundgren not in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame?
Yeah, every year I look at this list and go, they're not in?
Yeah, how is Todd Rundgren, seriously, how is Todd Rundgren not in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame?
Stevie Ray Vaughan was one of those guys forever, too. He took forever to get in.
I'm also surprised MC5's not in. That's a band that, I mean, one of the most legendary groundbreaking bands of all time.
Yep.
They should be in. Well, here are the nominees. Let's talk a little bit about them. Radiohead, that makes sense. You know, I mean, maybe they won't get in on the first ballot, you know, but they probably will.
I think they will because they're a big name and they want that for the broadcast.
Yep. That's true. That's true. Def Leppard, they'll probably get in.
Yeah.
Stevie Nicks, now, she's in with Fleetwood Mac.
Right.
But this is just for her solo stuff.
Does her solo stuff warrant it?
No.
I would argue no.
I would say no.
Maybe her as a trailblazing female in that era.
Yes.
Sure.
Absolutely.
I don't know about the music.
I think Joan Cusack from School of Rock will vote for her.
Okay.
That's the only thing I know. Rage Against the Machine, I say no. And I know that, you know, like, everybody, I don't know.
I think they're going to get in, too. For that same Radiohead reason.
Yeah. The Cure, have they not been nominated before?
I don't know if The Cure's been nominated. The Cure they should be in.
Yeah.
To me, they're one of those early architects of alternative music.
Oh, God, Devo, yes, they should be in.
Devo,
they should have been in already.
Same, yeah.
I mean, that's ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
Janet Jackson, you know.
Again, you could make the argument, sure.
Kraftwerk, I guess, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, absolutely.
Influential.
Influential, and actually, there probably wouldn't be a Devo without Kraftwerk.
True.
LL. My man, LL Cool J, nominated. I'd put him in.
I would put him in, and this is where everybody starts to argue now that it's the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Why is Run DMC in there? Why are these guys in there? Why is Tupac in there? I think that's a ridiculous argument.
Listen, man, hip-hop is on the same level as rock, as far as I'm concerned. You know what I mean? It's on the same level. I think it's coming from the same kind of place.
I was going to say, when they're both at their best, there's a similar message
there.
There's rebellion there.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And there are all, like, really good hip-hop and rap acts, I think, come from the same place as rebellious rock.
And I think at this point, the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, I mean, the rock and roll part, I don't even know it's meant to be taken literally. It's
John Prine is here.
Yeah.
He's not a rock and roll player. He doesn't play
but
rock
he should
and
be
roll.
In
yeah.
to me.
I mean, he's a legend. Prine. He's been around forever. Roxy Music, great band.
Yeah, another influential one that everybody would cite.
Rundgren, as we mentioned, should have been in a long time ago. Rufus featuring Chaka Khan.
Interesting.
Yeah. I don't know about that one. And I love Rufus featuring Chaka Khan, and I love Chaka Khan. But I don't know about that.
Is Chaka Khan in?
On her own?
I don't know.
That's a good question.
I have to check.
I think we mentioned that before. I don't think she is. Okay. I think the last time we discussed this, because we discussed it a few weeks ago when they announced these, and I don't think Chaka Khan is in. And then finally, the Zombies, who I think should be in.
Yeah, I agree with that.
So, interesting. You know, every year it's interesting, and it is, you know, when we can, you know, bitch and moan about it all we want, and we do every, every
yes,
year.
Yes, we do. Def Leppard.
Like, yeah. I see. Def Leppard to me.
I don't dislike them.
Def Leppard to me is not as much of a crime as Bon Jovi.
Yeah, I agree with that.
I think Bon Jovi is. The fact that Bon Jovi got in before, you know,
all these other bands that we're mentioning,
you know, with Todd Rundgren, for God's sake. We just talked about it. So that's to me a bigger. I mean, you know, Def Leppard, I think. I don't know if they should be in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame now, you know, or, you know. But Jovi last year, I was like, come on, man.
Yeah. You know why? You know why Rage Against the Machine is going to get in? Because of all the bands that we just ran down on that list, they're the one where there will be a controversy about will they get back together? Will Zach show up and sing?
Right. I didn't even think of
that. Every year we have to go through this, and they're the only one that jumped out at me as having that immediate issue.
Yeah. Now the other ones are.
So they'll get in.
I mean, yeah. So for that reason, they'll get in.
We need some controversy.
Exactly. Has LL ever been nominated?
I think he's been nominated.
Mm-hmm.
I spoke with Colin Blunstone of the Zombies. This is their fourth nomination in 5 years.
Put him in.
Which gets kind of to the point of ridiculousness, right? I mean, it's the same way. I mean, we say it all the time with the Baseball Hall of Fame. When somebody lingers on the ballot for, you know, Andre Dawson, I think, was on the ballot for like 13 years.
Yeah.
Finally got in his last year of eligibility. But
they took Ron Santo to die before they put him in.
Yes. It just gets kind of ridiculous.
It does. So tell me about that conversation, Colin Blunstone of the Zombies.
I think he's 76. And I mean, him and Rod Argent are still out there doing that. But we spoke about the 50th anniversary of the Odyssey and Oracle album. And just kind of that need for them to continue to push things forward and try new music, because he told me they're getting ready to write and record a new album. They put one out a couple of years ago. So despite the large gap in there, you know, between the years,
still
they're
working,
active.
Though.
Yeah, they're still active, and they still care about trying new stuff.
Yeah, great band, man.
Mm-hmm.
Great band, and they deserve to be in. By the way, this is LL's fifth nomination and The Cure's second.
Okay.
So that's where that stands.
Interesting.
Yeah. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah.
Again, you can vote if you want. Vote for Todd Rundgren.
For sure.
He's on my top of this list. I mean, I'm looking at a lot of bands on this list I think should be in. But the one where I did a double take was I saw Todd Rundgren on the list, and I'm like, how is he not in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame?
Did we say Warren Zevon's not on the ballot this year?
No. He's not been on, ever. Never.
Literally never even been nominated?
Never been nominated. He is one of the greatest songwriters in the history of rock.
I knew he wasn't in, but I didn't realize he had not even been nominated.
Never been on the ballot.
That's insanity.
It's complete insanity. It makes me crazy. So, anyway. All right, let's break here, Jim. Hold on. A lot of concerts that you saw and music that we want to talk about. And if you want to jump in, it's 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. Get your Two for Tuesday requests in as well. Same number. All right. Welcome back, everyone. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're in the Allstate Skyline studio. We're here till 5 a.m. It's Tuesday, Two for Tuesday. Yeah, man, Two for Tuesday. Get your requests in. One artist, two songs. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. Coming up a little bit later on in the show, Lindsey Cochran and Phil Angotti are going to join me from Great Moments in Vinyl. They're paying tribute to the Moody Blues this Thursday at Martyrs, and we'll give you all the details on that. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Jim Ryan is with us. He writes about music for Forbes, the Daily Herald in Chicago now. Follow him on Twitter at Radio Jim Ryan. Jim, welcome back.
Thank you, sir.
Before the news, before we took a break, we were talking about the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. And, Jim, you happen to have the current standings of the fan vote. Like, who's leading in the votes from the fans?
You know who's leading in the votes from the fans.
It's Def Leppard, yeah.
It is Def Leppard with a staggering 243,475 votes.
Oh, my God.
Which puts them 13,000 votes in front of Stevie Nicks. So a tight race there between Def Leppard and Stevie Nicks.
Stevie Nicks is in second place.
Yeah, The Cure is third. Todd Rundgren is fourth.
Okay.
With 130,000 votes.
Wait a minute. So he's got 107,000 less than...
That's correct.
Oh, my God.
The Zombies somehow are in fifth place ahead of Janet Jackson and Devo and Radiohead and Rage. That's kind of amazing. Let's go to the bottom of the list.
All right, who's the least voted for?
The MC5.
A band that we both said should be in.
Groundbreaking, influential right. punk rock.
Yeah.
Last place. Who? Everyone's like, what?
Who's that?
What's MC5?
Yeah.
Okay. Kraftwerk, second to last, of course. Again, a lot of the same accolades there.
Yeah.
Rufus, third to last. John Prine, fourth from the bottom. And LL Cool J, fifth from last.
But Def Leppard has a pretty good lead.
A commanding lead for Def Leppard.
Oh, man. All right.
Yeah. Well,
keep voting, everybody.
Please.
Get your votes in for Todd Rundgren, for God's sake. All right. So let's talk a little bit. You know who I have coming up on the show?
I just heard this during the break.
Phil Angotti is going to be
fantastic.
On the show. And you saw Phil with Material Reissue.
Yeah.
When they opened for Liz Phair.
That was one of my favorite shows of the year so far.
Is that right?
Yeah, I
loved
it.
We're going to talk with Phil in a little bit.
That's I had seen Liz Phair earlier a couple of months ago, last month, at Riot Fest.
Mm-hmm.
It was kind of like, it was good. It was fine. Indoors at Metro, a considerably, you know, a little better room for that.
Oh, yeah.
But a four-piece backing band, they were fantastic. She sounds great.
Mm-hmm.
And Material Reissue opening, I mean, that's, you know, I never got a chance. I'm a big Material Issue fan. I never got a chance to see them when I was younger.
I did. I got to see them once.
And she brought Mike and Ted out to do Turning Japanese for the first time live together.
I heard about
that. They recorded that, you know, single together, but never performed it, apparently. So.
Yeah. Well, there you go. It was a good show. So Liz Phair sounded good.
Liz sounded good. I think Phil does such a nice job, you know, filling hard shoes to fill, really.
Jim was a legend, man.
Yeah.
That's
not an easy situation to step into, but I think he does it real well and real respectfully.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Phil's a pro, man.
Yeah.
I mean, he's been, I've known him for, I don't know, 30 years or something like that. Like 30 years I've known him. And, you know, I mean, he works around town constantly.
All the time.
Man, constantly. Mm-hmm. I mean, look, he's playing Thursday in a Moody Blues tribute on Thursday.
I keep getting the Great Moments in Vinyl alerts.
They're great. I got to tell you, man, Lindsay is a friend of the show. Lindsay Cochran, he organizes it and gets all the musicians together. And he's brought in some incredibly talented musicians into the studio here, and they've performed live.
Sure.
And he gets, like, top-notch. I mean, it's not...
Okay.
You know, I mean, he gets the best musicians in Chicago to work with him. And then it's a unique experience because not only do they pay tribute to whatever artist, or they play, like, two full albums sometimes.
Wow.
In between songs, he tells, like, these great stories, and he's got a great voice. He's a radio guy.
Okay.
He's got this great voice, and he's a great storyteller, and he tells stories about the band and what they were going through and the making of whatever album they're talking about, and he digs deep and goes and does tons of research for it. So it's not just a bunch of guys on stage, you know, doing a tribute band thing.
Okay.
It's an entirely different experience.
Is that at Martyrs?
Yeah, it's at Martyrs. That's kind of their home base. That's their home base. They play at Martyrs. Most of the time. I mean, they do other special gigs outside of Martyrs, but that's kind of their home base.
Okay.
So, yeah, so it's Thursday night. They're doing
Moody Blues. I may have to check that out Thursday.
Yeah, and it'll be fun. We're going to talk to him, Lindsay and Phil, probably after 2:30.
Very cool.
So we'll have them on. All right, so you'd never seen Material Issue before?
Yeah, I've seen Material Reissue with Phil handling the vocals. They've done it. I can't believe it's this long now. I think they've done it since 2011, 2012 as Material Reissue.
Has it really been that long?
I think it's been that long. Wow. I would have to check. They did that initial reunion, you know, if you want to call it reunion. They did four or five shows. They were at the Taste with the Lemonheads. They did a show at Abbey Pub. I remember, I think, the Double Door Fitzgerald's.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's just been kind of on and off since then, but I think they do a nice job with it. And I don't know. I have a hard time when anyone tries to begrudge guys like that from going out there and doing that. You know what I mean? They wrote those songs. Why shouldn't they go play them?
Yeah. Now, what was the crowd? Was it a sold out crowd for Liz Phair?
So they tacked Sunday on at the kind of the last minute. Saturday sold out.
Yeah.
And then they added Sunday, and it was a good crowd, not sold out, but a very good crowd Sunday night, especially for short notice like that.
Well, and what are we talking about age range wise?
It was that was kind of all over the place. It was kind of probably kind of more your and my age.
Yeah. I mean, that's when she was at her height of popularity.
The night before, Saturday night, was a younger band called Speedy Ortiz opening, and then Sunday was Material Reissue kind of tacked on, like I say, at the last minute. So probably a little different crowd Sunday than what was there Saturday night.
Yeah.
But it was great.
It doesn't surprise me that Liz Phair would sell out the Metro.
Yeah, not surprising. Even that close to Riot Fest, yeah.
Yeah, no, she's Liz Phair.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's all you can say. I remember the days when you would bump into Liz Phair.
I was walking down Clark. I had stepped out of the G-Man next door and was walking into the Metro, and she came walking right down Clark and then turned to go in that kind of side door over there. I'm like... Yeah. Well, that's kind of cool.
Yeah, I remember.
No entourage, nothing,
Back in the day, she was like the queen of Wicker Park, like everywhere. I mean, she was everywhere, every night she was in some place in Wicker Park, just as her career started to take off.
Okay.
And this was right before Guyville came out. When Guyville came out, obviously it went through the roof. I think she's great.
She's got a box set out called... From Guyville to Guyville to the Girly Sound, I think is the name of the box set, and they kind of celebrate a lot of that stuff off Exile and Guyville because that's 25 years old.
Isn't
now.
That insane?
That is insane.
It's really crazy. And 25 years.
To think that the message on a lot of those songs, I would argue, is more relevant now, 25 years after she wrote them, than we thought they were pretty relevant in 1993. But look where we are today.
Exactly.
Which is kind of amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, she's great. I'm glad the show was cool. And it's nice that Material Reissue got to reopen. Mm-hmm. Got to open for them. And then at a place like the Metro, which is such a great place to see a show. So, Tom Morello played Lincoln Hall, speaking of Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Yeah, seriously. Yeah.
What's going on there?
He's got a new album out and did kind of the album preview party at Lincoln Hall. That was last week, a week and a half ago. Mm-hmm. It was a Monday night. Such a rock and roll night. But Monday at Lincoln Hall, and he brought out Tim McElrath from Rise Against, and they played some songs together. He did kind of a Q&A session for about an hour and 10 minutes.
Wow.
And then he would break and kind of just do solo guitar parts. So he did just the guitar solo that he does on The Ghost of Tom Joad, the Springsteen version. He did that. He closed with his guitar solo from Killing in the Name of, and invited everyone... Anyone who could fit onto the stage, he invited up.
Wow.
So I have the video on Twitter and on Facebook. It's crazy, actually.
Oh, I would love to see that.
Literally, the entire stage is full, and he's surrounded as he's playing the guitar solo to Killing in the Name of.
That's pretty cool.
He had also bought the crowd a shot and then invited them up.
He brought the entire crowd. He bought
everyone a shot of whiskey and then brought them up on stage.
Oh, God.
Libertyville Zone.
Yeah, Libertyville Zone, Tom Morello.
Yeah.
So, and Lincoln Hall is such a great place to see a show.
Yeah, that's, I mean, I think as a fan, I've heard performers not love playing there, but as a fan, the sound is just
really
amazing. You can kind of hear a pin drop.
Performers that don't like playing there?
I've heard a couple say that.
Wow.
A
few years ago, Buffalo Tom played there at Lincoln Hall, and they were very happy.
Okay,
with how it sounded.
I don't want to knock Lincoln Hall. I love Lincoln Hall.
No, I love Lincoln Hall too. I'm surprised because, as you said, you know, as a patron and as a fan,
I remember seeing Fiona Apple there and just thinking it was crazy. I mean, because you could hear a pin drop between songs.
Yeah. I just think they set that place up beautifully, acoustically.
Yeah.
I mean, really amazing. Yeah. Okay. And what about the Revolution at Park West?
That's another one where I just think they handle what could be a difficult situation where you're going to have a lot of fans complaining, and I think they handled it as respectfully as possible. And that's
just Prince's backing band from
Prince's,
you know, Purple Rain
band.
and onward.
And so they backed him on his biggest hits, two albums. I know Wendy and Lisa did a lot more with him, but I think two albums technically is the Revolution.
Well, yeah, it's Under the Cherry Moon. No, it's three albums. It's
okay.
It's Purple Rain. It's Around the World,
and
and
Purple Rain.
Purple Rain, Around the World in a Day, and God, the one with Kiss on it. I just said the name of it.
Under the Cherry Moon.
Parade.
Oh, Parade. Yeah.
That's it. Parade. Under the Cherry Moon was the movie. let's not discuss Under the Cherry Moon right now.
What, you know what? That one's better than Graffiti Bridge, though. To me, Graffiti Bridge is the real deal.
I think
it's
a question of which one's worse, really.
Yeah, right. That's, yeah.
But the thing about it is that both of the movies were not good.
Right.
The music is great. So it's like...
But you can just tell Graffiti Bridge was filmed on a soundstage in Paisley Park.
Oh, no question.
You can just tell.
Yeah, no question. And, you know, of all the movies that have been made that involve Prince, the only great one is Sign of the Times. Because that's pretty much just a... Have you seen Sign of the Times?
Yeah, I have, yeah.
That's just a straight-up stylized concert movie.
Concert movie, yeah.
And it's... Because Sign of the Times is my favorite Prince album.
Was it Showtime that finally just started airing that
they
again?
They just started airing it again. And after like years and years of not being available, they started airing it. And that's the best thing that Prince on film has ever done. I know a lot of people love Purple Rain. I choose not to go back and watch Purple Rain because I watched it when he died.
Okay.
Like right after he died, I was like, you know, I wanted to get a Prince fix going. And it's a terrible movie.
Purple Rain is?
Yeah. It's a terrible movie, and it's insanely misogynistic.
Like, oh, it is. Yeah, that it is.
Insanely misogynistic. So,
but I get enjoyment out of the campiness of that one that I don't in Graffiti Bridge.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. I do. It's just that when it first came out in 84, I was the biggest Prince fan. I mean, I was a ridiculous Prince fan. I saw that movie in the theater like 8 times. And then I go back and I look at it and I'm like, oh, man. Oh, man, the female characters in this movie. Oh, my God.
I know.
And then, like, the acting of Prince is terrible. I don't want to offend the dead because I love Prince. I'm one of the biggest Prince fans in the world. Have you heard the story about what happened after Prince died and the movie Green Room?
No.
Do you know the movie Green Room?
No.
Anton Yelchin, one of his last movies, Patrick Stewart, they play a punk band who are trapped by neo-Nazis in the green room of a bar where they just played. And it's really brutal and very violent and really good.
Okay.
Like really, really
interesting.
Good. It's called Green Room. I highly recommend it. It's an intense, great movie.
All right.
So at one point, the band is stuck in there and these maniacs with guns, these neo-Nazis with knives and axes and guns and stuff are outside, led by Patrick Stewart, by the way, which is great casting. So they're in there and at one point they're like, they think they're going to die. So they're revealing things about themselves, like what their actual favorite bands are. And they're a punk band. So they've got this facade of being, you know, like tough. And so Green Room came out the day after Prince died. It came out the day after Prince died. And at one point, Anton Yelchin says, all right, man. Because they're talking about favorite bands. And, you know, immediately they go to punk bands and stuff. And then people are like, let's get real, you know. And so there's a pause. And Anton Yelchin goes, it's Prince, man. It's Prince. And I saw it at the Music Box Theater. The entire audience applauded. Because it was literally the day after Prince passed away.
You can't even script that.
You can't. And everybody went, oh, and then cheered because it was Prince. We were all feeling that death, you know? It was so fresh. And then I get out of the theater, and I post on Facebook because that's what you do. And I said, hey, I just had this great experience in the movie. Prince gets mentioned in the movie Green Room, and everybody, you know, audibly sighed and then gave a round of applause. And then I saw a post on Yahoo News. It was happening all across the country.
Wow.
Like at screenings of Green Room across the country, there was spontaneous applause being
because
reported.
Prince was mentioned. That's amazing.
Because Prince was the man. He was the man. So, hold on a second. We got a break, but I want to hear how the revolution was.
Okay.
But speaking of Prince. So we're going to take a break and we'll come back. Jim Ryan is with us. And we got the news coming up in a few minutes as well. All right. Hey, welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. And we are live in the Allstate Skyline Studio. It's Tuesday, 2 for Tuesday. You hear me? 2 for Tuesday. Get your request in now. One artist, two songs, 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. Coming up after the 2:30 news, we'll be talking with Lindsey Cochran and Phil Angotti from Great Moments in Vinyl. They're going to be paying tribute to the Moody Blues at Martyrs this Thursday night. And we'll tell you all about that. And we're going to talk about game shows as well. So that's what's coming up. And also coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN Radio. Jim Ryan is with me in studio, writes about music for Forbes, The Daily Herald, Chicago Now. You can follow him on Twitter at Radio Jim Ryan. And we were just talking a little bit off the air about you interviewed one of the members of Garbage.
Yeah, Steve Marker.
Okay, and the reason why is because Garbage just played last week.
Right.
On the 20th anniversary.
At the Riv, yeah.
At the Riv, and I know that our good friend Esmeralda Leon was there because she loves...
I saw her Facebook post. I didn't know this was her big
one. Oh, she loves Shirley Manson, loves Garbage.
Well, she chose wisely.
Yeah, and she'll be coming back on the show, I think, week after next, Dan?
Yeah, about that.
Esmeralda will be in to be back on the show. We're going to have her in for the whole show.
That's awesome.
It's Esmeralda. We miss her. So anyway, so Garbage, and you interviewed him, and you were telling me off the air about a story that he told you?
Yeah, he was, because, I mean, they were all, with the exception of Shirley, you know, just up I-94 in Madison, Wisconsin.
Yeah.
So we were talking about concerts because he was like, we would always come to Chicago. There was nothing, you know, coming to Madison, Wisconsin. There wasn't a lot in Milwaukee. We'd come to Chicago all the time. So he told me a story about going to the Aragon to see Public Enemy and Sonic Youth.
Yeah, I was at that show.
And then walking out of the Aragon to, like, a riot, basically, unfolding on Lawrence.
Right on, yeah, absolutely, right on Lawrence. And I was at that show. And
what a crazy billing, first of all. Sonic Youth and Public Enemy.
It was phenomenal.
That's amazing.
It was phenomenal.
You don't see stuff like that anymore.
No. But yeah, I mean, so we were at that show, and the reason why there was a riot outside was because people were protesting the first Gulf War.
Okay.
So this was like the winter of 91. It was like February of 91, and that's when the first Gulf War broke out, and there were tons of protesters outside. There's an interesting little story behind this one also, is that at that time, I knew and was hanging out with John Cusack.
Okay.
Like, I knew him at that time. In the late 80s into the early 90s, I knew John, and, you know, I knew Jeremy and John and those guys, and hung out with them a lot. And he was at the show, at the Public Enemy Sonic Youth show. And we saw each other, we talked a little bit and everything, and then we walk outside afterwards, all of us walk outside afterwards, and the cops, you know, got their batons out.
Right.
Right in front on Lawrence, right in front of the Aragon. And they were beating heads, and it was and the protesters had their, you know, the signs about, you know, getting out of Iraq and you know it's an unjust war and blah blah blah. Okay. And they were protesting, and so it went crazy. We didn't stay very long because it was ugly. When we got out of the concert, I mean, it was a riot in the streets.
You're filling in all the blanks for me, because when he told the story, he didn't know why the riot was happening. Oh. He just knew they walked out of that particular billing and there was a riot, and they didn't know if that had anything to do with it.
No, you know what? It's just ironic that, yeah, you know, you got Public Enemy and Sonic Youth,
right,
playing a show, and then there's a riot outside, but it was about the Gulf War.
Okay.
And I don't know if people who went to the concert got involved, you know, in
bad timing for 5,000
horrible timing,
people
because
be walking
there were,
out of the air.
Exactly, because the protesters were already out there.
Right.
We were all in the concert. And when we got out of the concert, I don't know if the people who were pumped up because they just saw P.E.
Right.
And Sonic Youth got in on it. I'm sure some of them did, because they sold beer in buckets at the Aragon at that time.
Of course they did.
They would give you, we get a plastic bucket of beer, and you would dip your cup, you put it down on the floor, and you would dip your cup in it to scoop out. That's how they sold beer at the Aragon. So we get out of the concert, and all hell breaking loose, and we're supposed to meet some people over at the Red Lion, when it was Red Lion,
yeah,
used to,
yeah,
be,
yeah,
around Lincoln Avenue. So we got out of there, and we got to our car, and we drove up to the Red Lion, and we were telling everybody about the story and everything. And then the next day, in the Sun Times, Cusack wrote an op-ed piece.
Wow.
A anti-cop op-ed piece.
Okay.
And I talked to John. I was like, dude, that's kind of a ballsy thing for you to do.
Yeah,
man.
In Chicago.
But
no,
he said he witnessed some really bad behavior on the part of the Chicago police officers in the handling of the protesters. And, you know, batons were used. And so I don't think it got to tear gas or anything like that. But we were gone by that point.
If I recall, I think the story Steve Marker told me was that he was at that show with Duke Erickson. This was pre-Garbage or anything like that.
Yeah,
so
yeah, 91.
Fans.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And they walk out and they see this, and they're just like, what the hell? And they could see Flavor Flav looking out one of the windows, like yelling down at people, just like,
yeah, boy!
Yeah.
That is fantastic!
And he's just like, the whole thing was surreal.
God, that's great. I wish I had seen Flavor Flav, yeah, hanging out the window. Man, that's great. Hanging out the window, big clock swinging. Mm-hmm. Oh,
yelling,
man,
at rioters.
That is hilarious. That is so hilarious, man. I don't that totally tops my story. Yeah. But no, but Cusack did it. It ran in the Sun-Times.
That's amazing.
The op-ed piece, you know, and you know, he said he had witnessed this and witnessed that. He was talking about the going to the concert and how unfair it was and all that afterwards.
Wow.
Yeah, that was an interesting time. I had kind of forgotten about that. And then like the same year, but later that year, that's when they played with Anthrax.
Okay.
PE came, they were on the Fear of a Black Planet tour.
That Public Enemy version of the
Bring the Noise.
Yes, with Anthrax. It's the best version of that song.
Without question.
The Public Enemy version is good. That Anthrax version rocks.
It's without question, man. It's a jam.
Yes.
But no, I'm sorry. They were on the they were on the tail end of the Fear of the Black Planet tour when they played with Sonic Youth. When they came back later in the year, they were on the tour for the album with Can't Trust It.
Oh, yeah, I can picture the cover.
I can picture the cover now, and I can't think of the name of it. But that with Can't Trust It.
Okay.
And that's what they were touring for. Wow. That's when they played with Anthrax, and it was unbelievable. I ended up with a busted 2x4 in my hand because they made the mistake of putting seats on the main floor, and it, you know, like folding chairs on the main floor.
Where was this at?
Aragon.
They wow, okay.
And they like kind of cobbled them together with 2x4s. And so people started ripping the seats up.
Of course.
And busting 2x4s. And I jumped on my friend's back. I had a 2x4 with some beer in me. And I jumped on my friend's back. I had a 2x4 in my hand and a bloody nose because someone smacked me in the face. And I remember
this is how the Brawl Room got its reputation.
Oh, absolutely, man. Absolutely. And so I remember going to meet my girlfriend at the time. That was Dan Leslie Presley. Going to meet my girlfriend at the time, who was like, you know, it's going to be dangerous going to see Public Enemy and Anthrax. It's going to be nuts. And I'm like, shut up. It's going to be great.
Yeah.
And we met again at the Red Lion, which I guess was a thing. So I meet her at the Red Lion. I walk in. I'm kind of drunk. I'm sweaty because I was in there. Right. And I got blood caked on my nose. She's like, I told you. And I'm like, no, my friends did that to me. So
I have another story.
I have another story about that concert, too. We can talk about that. And I still want to hear about how the revolution was. But anyway, you talked
to that.
Garbage. That's such a great story, though.
Yeah.
All right, Jim, hang on.
All right.
We'll take a break. The news is up next. All right. Well, welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline studio. It is Tuesday, 2 for Tuesday. Yeah, man, 2 for Tuesday. Get your requests in. We'll play them later. It's one artist, two songs, 312-981-7200. Lindsey Cochran and Phil Angotti of Great Moments in Vinyl are going to join us after the 2:30 news to talk about their tribute to the Moody Blues, which is happening Thursday at Martyrs. We're here till 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5. The great Steve Cochran at 6 for your Tuesday morning drive. 312-981-7200 for talk and text. Follow us on Twitter at Nick D Show. Best way to stay connected is on our Facebook page, facebook.com/Nick D Show. Joining us in studio is Jim Ryan. He writes about music for Forbes, The Daily Herald, and Chicago Now. You can follow him on Twitter at Radio Jim Ryan. Jim, thanks for sticking around.
Thank you.
So we were talking a little bit before the break about the adventures at the Aragon.
Oh, my God.
And particularly the night that Anthrax and Public Enemy played, and there was a riot in the streets afterwards. Let me tell you another quick story about the Aragon. I'll give you another quick story about the Anthrax night. Let me just tell you this story.
Okay.
I went to that show with like three of my friends, and so we go over to my friend Mike Meredith is with me at this one, and Mike is a big guy, like he's a big dude. He weighs like 300 and some pounds. He's big.
Sure.
So he's walking. He and I are walking to go get some beer in the back of the Aragon.
Okay.
So we go back and we get our beer, and we each have two beers in our hands. And
a bucket or a
no,
single?
No, okay. These were just singles.
Okay.
These were singles. And so we each have like two beers in our hand, and we walk back. And the buckets of beer weren't being sold at Anthrax; they were at Sonic Youth.
Okay.
So anyway, we had our regular beers, and you know, we each have a beer in our hand, and we're walking back. And we wanted to get two beers so that we didn't have to leave.
Sure.
Wait in line, come back.
Of course. Just, you know.
So we each had a beer. He's got two beers in his hand, and as he's walking, we'd had a few already. So this was between Anthrax and Public Enemy.
Right.
We went out to get another couple of beers. So we come back, and Mike's a really, like I said, he's a really big guy. And we walk back, and all of a sudden, his pants start to fall down. And
okay.
I don't really know why, but his pants start to fall down. And they fall down, and they're at his ankles. And so instead of putting a beer down, he decides, I'll just finish one. So he's drinking an entire beer with his pants down. People are walking past like, what the hell? And I'm like, why don't you just put it down? So he figured I'll just finish the beer and then I'll pull my pants up with my free
sure,
hand.
Sure, why not?
So that was the logic behind that. That's the kind of night it was. Let me just say, that's the kind of night it was when you opt to drink a beer to free up your hand to pull the pants that
pants
have fallen.
Back on.
Exactly.
Yeah, okay.
And people were walking past going, this guy's pants, this 300-pound guy's pants are on the ground. What is... So... Anyway, wow. that's the kind of stuff that happens at the Aragon.
The Aragon. Oh my God, that place.
So the other show that I wanted to mention to you, because they had seats, because we were talking about how ridiculous it would to put chairs on the floor of the Aragon.
So
they put chairs on the floor of the Aragon at this show, and I was in the balcony for this one.
Okay.
So
sometimes it's fun, by the way, at the Aragon to be in the balcony and watch the bedlam unfold.
Oh yeah, yeah. I still have a connection, but I had a connection at Jam. And they got me in the good balcony, like lower on the side where you get a good view and everything. Not all the way back in the crappy part of the balcony.
Yeah, yes.
So we were in really great seats. We're like first row in the balcony. Awesome seats. And it was for the Butthole Surfers.
Oh, my God. Okay.
Helmet.
Okay.
And your headliner was Faith No More.
That's a lineup that really captures a moment in time.
It certainly does. And Dan, do you remember the name of the band with the kid that was at that show with me? Because remember I started talking about it? We had a band in here, and they've been in a couple of times, these guys. They're really great, and you're young dudes. And I can't remember the name of the band, but they're really, we've had them on, I think, 2-3 times. And he started talking about his favorite concert that he'd ever, you know, like one of the first concerts he ever went to. And he mentioned this Faith No More night. And then I go, oh my God, was that the night, blah, blah, blah? And then we both started going crazy because here's what happened. Faith No More comes out, all right? And then we've sat through the Butthole Surfers. We sat through Helmet. Both, by the way, good sets.
Okay.
And, so now we're ready for Faith No More. Faith No More comes out. Mike Patton is like I guess maybe he didn't realize that there were chairs on the floor on the main floor.
Okay.
So or maybe it took him a song to go, what is why what's what because there were people sitting
looks
and
like
stuff.
An assembly. Yeah.
So he goes, hey, listen, I don't like these chairs. So listen, pick them up and throw them up here. Throw them
perfect.
Up here.
Yeah,
so
yeah, yeah. That's a great idea.
People from the back
are flinging their chairs forward.
No, they're handing them forward
in
an orderly fashion, and they're throwing them on the stage. I'm not making this up.
No, I'm picturing this as you're describing
it. And it's a packed house, and all the chairs are being...
5,000 chairs,
are being handed over their heads over really quickly, and the image was... amazing, like all these chairs, and by you know, and like 5 minutes in, the back two rows are empty, and people are just standing, and then it just keeps clearing, clearing, and clearing. Meanwhile, on the stage, there are hundreds of chairs, folding chairs that have been piled up on the stage, and Mike Patton is like taking them and throwing them, and they played the rest of the show. And they had stagehands come out and start clearing.
I was going to say, Mike Patton was like a union stagehand that night.
They had stagehands come out and start to clear them away. But for the most part, there were like hundreds of folding chairs
on stage and
none on the ground. It was one of the most amazing things I've ever seen in my life. And that kid who was in that band, I said, wait a minute, was that the night with the chairs? And he went, yeah, because he was there too. Because that's something you don't forget.
No, yeah.
So the Aragon Brawl, we should just do a show on Aragon Ballroom
Aragon
stories, man. Yeah, because I mean, there's a ton of them.
We would need to get a caller who was at the Sting show recently at the Aragon.
Was it Sting
now,
and
that's
Shaggy?
A show where there should be chairs.
Right. Yeah.
You could put chairs there for that.
Yeah, absolutely. Being a Sting fan, I admit that. We need chairs. We all need chairs to see Sting. All right, so let's get back to the Revolution.
Yeah, yes, okay.
That we were talking about 9 years ago.
Yes.
So the Revolution, that's the band, and it's all the regular members, the original members.
It's Wendy and Lisa, Dr. Fink, it was
Brown
awesome.
Mark.
Brown Mark was there. He sang quite a bit. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
It was really great.
And they do all the classic songs, but they split the vocals up between them.
And they only do so. Wendy and Lisa do a lot of vocals. Brown Mark does a lot of vocals. Wendy plays a heck of a lot of guitar and is a very good guitar player. By the
way,
she is. I don't think people realize all the, in addition to the albums together that they've done, the body of work they've kind of put together. Outside the Revolution,
yeah,
they scored. I didn't know that they scored Heroes.
Yep.
On NBC.
Yep, they scored
that.
Heroes. They've done other scores.
They've
too.
Done a ton of them. Yeah.
I've got all of their solo albums. I've seen them. I've seen Wendy and Lisa solo about 5 times.
I would love to see them. I'm supposed to be interviewing. I have. By the way, I have a voicemail from Wendy. I have another.
You do.
I have another voicemail I could play you now that now that we think about that.
You know, we're looping back to the John Cusack times when I was hanging out with him. You know who he was dating when I was hanging out with him the most?
No.
Her twin sister.
Oh, so, okay, and Prince asked her to marry him or was engaged to her or something?
Yeah.
There was something there, too.
Was it Susanna? Susanna Melvoin.
I believe that's
Melvoin,
correct. Yeah.
So that's they were dating at the time. So, you know, I got to hang out with her a little bit, which was pretty interesting. And at that time, I ended up seeing Wendy and Lisa with them.
There was a ton I was prepping to interview Wendy and Lisa, and there was a ton that I was not familiar with in that story. I didn't realize Wendy's brother was the touring keyboard player from the Smashing Pumpkins who passed away in the 90s.
Yep.
There was a ton I was totally not familiar with in that story, or that Wendy and Lisa's both of their fathers were in the Wrecking Crew.
Oh yeah, that's right. I totally forgot about that.
Legendary session band.
Man, what a crazy history story for that. I mean, it's nuts.
So they had known each other from like 2 years old on.
Their solo stuff is great. Their solo stuff is great. Their first solo album, the Wendy and Lisa album, it's got Waterfalls on it, and it's not obviously not the TLC version.
Right.
It's got Waterfalls on it and some other really great songs. I love that album. I wore that album out when it came out. I wore that album out.
I need to listen to it because I don't know their stuff that well.
But, okay, so the Revolution, and it was good? They handled it well? Was it a good crowd?
It was a packed crowd at Park West. It was part of a new fall kind of festival they were doing called Big Weekend Out. And so there were some shows at Park West. There were shows at Concord Music Hall. There were shows at four or five indoor venues throughout the city that weekend, and the Revolution was the big one.
Yeah.
But it was great. Yeah, I think they do it very respectfully. And I mean, those are songs that they're connected to. They're part of the writing process on those songs.
Yeah.
Kind of in a way, I would say, I mean, once Prince broke away from them, did anyone really have that kind of role in his writing process ever again?
No. Mm-mm.
I mean, I think that's part of the reason it didn't last very long.
Yeah. The new Power Generation was not...
Right.
You know,
they weren't really writing, I don't think.
No.
They're great.
Yeah, awesome, but no.
Yeah, different.
Same thing, different thing. So that's the Revolution, and they've been touring for a while.
They
right?
have, yeah. This has been... Because they did two nights at Metro,
right.
I think, like a year and a half. Like, shortly after Prince passed away, they did two nights at Metro.
Yeah.
Because that night, they didn't do it this time at Park West, but that night they did Sometimes It Snows in April.
And
Wendy sang, and, you know, there was, like, people weeping on the floor. It was unlike anything I'd ever seen before.
It's not a dry eye in the house.
Yeah, it was.
Have you seen the performance that
D'Angelo?
Yeah,
with
Maya Rudolph. And
oh my god,
it's unbelievable.
Yeah,
and that was like a week after he died.
Mm-hmm.
I was weeping. It was, and it's such a beautiful song. It was a beautiful song. Okay, so that's the Revolution.
Yeah, that was outstanding.
All right, let's see. You talked to Jim Kerr of Simple Minds.
Yes.
How was that?
A rare U.S. tour from Simple Minds.
Yeah.
They're in the midst of that now. They were at Chicago Theater last week. I went up and caught them in Milwaukee. I have to say, I don't know a ton of Simple Minds. This is what's so weird about the Simple Minds story to me, that America is the one country where they're not massive, massive, massive. They sell out stadiums basically everywhere but here, even though the song from the Breakfast Club soundtrack is, you know, a major, major hit. But that's all anyone knows here. That and Alive and Kicking and not too much else.
Right.
That's a fantastic show. Their longtime guitar player, Charlie Burchill, tore it up. I mean, it was a fantastic show.
I saw them in their heyday.
Okay. Where was that at?
Poplar Creek.
Okay.
And they were great.
Yeah.
They were really great. And I like Simple Minds. Not just Don't You Forget About Me, but, you know, I'm a fan of their catalog.
Jim Kerr is a cool guy, too.
And he was married to Chrissy Hynde.
Right
there. He gets an eternal pass.
He seems like the nicest guy ever.
Yeah.
He seemed like the nicest guy ever on the phone. And then seeing him on stage, he just comes across as very humble. And I'm like, how did this guy survive a marriage with Chrissy Hynde?
Yeah. Yeah.
Because she's legendarily
crazy.
None of those things.
None of those things.
Yeah.
But now, did you got the story behind Don't You Forget About Me?
Yeah, the story was they didn't write it. So it's their biggest hit here, but it's the only one they didn't write.
So of course.
They didn't even want to do it. They had to be talked into doing it. Keith Forsey, who I think was a writer producer.
Yeah, he worked a lot with Billy Idol
So he wrote it, and it was intended for Billy Idol.
Ah, there you go.
And Billy Idol passed on it. Billy Idol passed on it, and Brian Ferry passed on it.
Oh!
And Cy Kernan from The Fix passed on it.
No!
And it fell to Simple Minds, who had to be convinced. Jim Kerr said, he didn't tell me this, but I saw him say this in an interview, that Chrissy had to convince him, you idiot, you have to record that. That's going to be a massive hit.
Wow, that's crazy. I didn't know it went through those. Cy Curnin, The Fix, one of my favorite 80s bands of all time. I'm not kidding. I love The Fix.
But he told me the story of being, he was doing promotional stuff for Simple Minds in, I think he said, France. And he was in a hotel room when he got a telegram telling him that the track went to number one. He's like, how cute is this? I got a telegram.
That's amazing.
So he gets a telegram saying it went to number one.
Yeah. That's a great story.
And he runs, he goes, I don't even drink. He goes, but I felt like I had to run down and make a toast. He goes, so I go down to the bar and I tell the bartender, open a bottle of champagne. The guy's like, what kind? And he goes, you know, the nicest one you have. And the guy's like, what are you celebrating? And he goes, you wouldn't believe me. And he goes, well, who are you celebrating with? And he goes, nobody, just me. He goes, so finally I tell him, you know, I'm in this band and we have this number one hit in America. And the guy looks at me like, yeah, right. He goes, so I just start belting expensive champagne by myself in this hotel bar. And eventually, as people start to stumble in, he goes, get that guy a drink. Get that man a drink. He goes, I'm Frank Sinatra. He goes, it cost me a fortune. And he goes, I still remember the headache to this day.
Amazing. That's a great story. Yeah. All right, hang on, Jim. We're going to break here, and we'll come back with more. All right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGiulio here on 720 WGN, and we're live in the Allstate Skyline Studio. Two for Tuesday, get your requests in here. One artist, two songs, 312-981-7200. Jim Ryan is with me, writes about music for Forbes, The Daily Herald, Chicago Now. Follow him on Twitter at Radio Jim Ryan. So, Jim, you had a conversation with Josh Groban.
I did, yeah.
Tell me about talking with Josh Groban.
That's running next week at Forbes. And I just love the fact that the reason I even had Josh Groban on the phone is because he's in a Netflix sitcom with Tony Danza.
Right.
Like, it just sounds like something I'd make up.
Right, Good Cop, right, or something like that?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
So he's got that. He's got a new album, and he's on tour. He's coming to United Center, I think, next month, a couple weeks. And he was great. I got him going on music in the classroom, the importance of music in the classroom, because he had that. That was his. He went to an arts high school in L.A., and he had that experience as part of his curriculum, despite the fact that it's kind of disappearing in America
right
at the moment.
Right.
And it's one of the key goals of his foundation. So he spoke very, very eloquently on why that is an important thing. And
very cool. So that's going to run in Forbes.
Yeah, that'll run in Forbes.
And you'll get his thoughts on Tony Danza as well.
We will get his thoughts on Tony Danza, yes.
All right, Foo Fighters closed out their tour. You saw him in Milwaukee.
Yeah, Grohl could barely sing by the end of it. Metallica had played at the new Fiserv Forum, so the new arena where the Bucks will be playing, the night before, and he went to it. And he could not sing on Tuesday in Milwaukee. So Taylor Hawkins was helping him quite a bit on the vocals.
Yeah.
And it was still a great show.
Yeah. Those guys put on a great show.
He said early on, he goes, I'm the guy that fell off the stage and broke my leg. I can't cancel the show because my voice sounds like pebbles in a blender.
Yeah. You can't do that. No. You can't at that point.
Nope.
But they've got such a huge fan base, man.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, the people love that band.
And a lot of Wayne's World references on stage in Milwaukee, too. The opener, Gang of Youths, turned to the crowd and did the We're Not Worthy bow to them. Grohl had mentioned Alice Cooper, you know, The Good Land.
Yeah.
And covered some Alice Cooper. So it was great, as always, with the Foo Fighters. Yeah. Great, fun show.
Milwaukee.
Yep. The Good Land.
Fleetwood Mac. Tell me about that. No Lindsey Buckingham.
I took a lot of grief on
bumped.
Twitter for
he,
this, by
he
the
got
way.
Bumped by Kenan Thompson.
I love that sketch.
I do too, man. All right, so what? Tell me about it.
So Lindsey Buckingham is out in his place. You have Mike Campbell of Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers, which I think is just a phenomenal fit on paper. And Neil Finn from Crowded House.
Love him.
Who is not just singing, but playing a hell of a lot of guitar. I had completely underrated him as a guitar player because he was fantastic.
That's great.
Yeah,
I love Neil Finn. I love Crowded House.
I enjoyed this Fleetwood Mac show more than the one I saw in 2014, which was Christine McVie returning to the group for the first time in a long time. I thought this show was better. And I love Lindsey Buckingham, but this was a great... The band actually looked like they were having fun, which I think has very rarely been the case.
And I had heard that they went back to their catalog, like, pretty deep.
They were doing they did all kinds of Peter Green stuff
that
they haven't done since the 70s.
That's amazing!
Yeah.
Wow.
Mike Campbell sang lead and played lead on Oh Well.
Wow.
Which, I mean, it was
That's great.
Fleetwood Mac fans, I think, were torn by virtue of the nostalgia that they tie in with Lindsay now.
Yeah.
But also hearing these songs that they haven't heard in literally 40 years.
When they're busting out the Peter Green, they're going deep.
Mm-hmm.
That's deep. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
So what are you looking forward to before you get out of here?
Busy week this week. We've Elton John, two shows at United Center.
Wow, that happened. Wow, that came quick.
Yeah, and then he's coming back again in the spring for two more at Allstate. But this weekend at United Center. What else is this week? There's a ton. Nine Inch Nails are doing three shows at Aragon.
Oh, yes.
So that should be interesting because, you know, obviously traditionally you have a larger stage show from them in a bigger venue. But they're doing three nights and stripping it down at the Aragon. So that should be interesting.
Okay. All right. Lots of stuff. And you can follow everybody at Radio Jim Ryan. And we'll get you back in here in a few weeks to recap all that stuff.
Sounds good.
Jim, always a pleasure, man.
Thank you.
All right. Have a good morning. We'll take a break here. The news is up next. Thank you all. Down, you plant your feet back on the ground. You fly so high, you swoop so low. You fly as astral plane. You take your trips around the bay. You bring it back the same day. That's great. Great stuff. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline studio. It is Tuesday. Two for Tuesday. Get your requests in now. One artist, two songs, 312-981-7200. Coming up a little bit, we're going to be talking about game shows and much more. 312-981-7200 is the phone number for talk and text. And what you just heard there was Great Moments in Vinyl. They'll be paying tribute to the Moody Blues this Thursday, October 25th at Martyrs. You can check out greatmomentsinvinyl.com for more information. We have a link on our Facebook page. And we always love to welcome the guys back to the show. First, let's welcome the guy who puts it all together, Lindsay Cochran. Lindsay, welcome back.
Hey, thank you so much. It always stuns me to hear us on your radio show. It's just a blast.
Yeah, no, it's great, man. You guys are the best. And then joining you as part of Great Moments in Vinyl this Thursday, paying tribute to the Moody Blues, is a good old friend of ours, Phil Angotti. Phil, how are you, man?
I'm good. Nick, how are you, buddy?
Good, good, good. Good to see. Good to hear from you.
Good talking to you.
Lindsay, tell us about as we often do about Great Moments in Vinyl. What's it all about?
Well, it was just a brainstorm I had a few years back, just that I love music. I love music, all kinds of music. And I thought, what a great way to get together with some of the musicians in this town who are very good at playing music to pay tribute to artists that we all love collectively. And with Great Moments in Vinyl, we just sampled different albums, different artists, different periods, different ways of putting music together with different bands, depending on who's got the strength to make each show happen. And this time out, actually, I've worked with Phil on a couple of different shows, Tom Petty and the Beatles and Nirvana, and Phil just said, hey, I've been test driving some Moody Blues stuff over the past year. I'd love to try doing a Great Moments in Vinyl show with their stuff. And I thought, I've always wanted to play that kind of music, you know, get that sort of Mellotron sound going, get a flute player in, get those harmonies and that Justin Hayward guitar. And well, anyway, we put it together. And this Thursday night, what you just heard was a rehearsal clip of us. It was basically Phil playing guitar and all the voices singing. They were working on harmonies tonight at our rehearsal. But we'll have the whole band there with drums and glockenspiel and flute and mellotron and everything Thursday night at Martyrs.
And who will be playing with you guys?
Well, I got Phil doing a lot of the lead. I have John Bowes, who's been on your program before, who plays flute. He's a great sax player in the Chicago scene, but we've got him playing the Ray Thomas flute, plus singing a few songs. Scott Tipping, who's been on your show with me before, an incredible guitar player and singer. So he'll be handling all the Justin Hayward lead guitar stuff and singing a few songs. Jim Ryan is going to be singing and playing the mellotron. We actually got a friend of Phil's loaned us his digital mellotron, so we have the actual sounds. He was in the rehearsal tonight playing clips of Strawberry Fields Forever and Isn't Life Strange, you know, the mellotron sound that Mike Pinder played on that particular Moody Blues song. So we have the instruments, we have the sound, we have the players. Also, a drummer by the name of Jim Barkley will be joining us, and he's just an amazing musician. So I'm stoked about this show.
Yeah, you always get the best musicians, Lindsay. They're really great.
Well, these guys love music. I mean, that's the secret. It's like, I tell these guys, how would you like to try to play this stuff? And they just love the challenge. I mean, it's not so much of a challenge. These are talented musicians. But it's as Phil was saying earlier, I think it was Phil, you said, it's like, when does anyone get the chance to play this stuff?
Yeah, true.
All right, Phil, tell me about your connection with the Moody Blues. Did you like them early on?
I did, Nick. You know, going back to, I don't have to tell you how much I love the Beatles, but, you know, as a kid growing up with the Beatles and the Stones and the Who, Kinks and Zombies, they were all kind of like the next band that I kind of discovered. And particularly in high school, I just thought the album covers are cool and the moody, interesting arrangements. It's a very different band. They could rock at times, but they're also very mellow and thought-provoking. And I always thought they were very interesting, and I love Justin Hayward singing.
Yeah.
So it's a band I really have truly always liked. And there's been a few songs over the years that I have performed either solo or the Beatle Brothers did a couple songs of theirs. But so many, like Lindsay was saying, there's so many songs from the catalog. They're great songs, but you just wouldn't play them normally with a band because a lot of them are just odd instrumentation-wise.
Yeah.
So it's fun.
Yeah. So you guys are going to have a nice challenge and a nice gig then on Thursday night. And again,
it really is.
Martyrs is your home. Yeah. Is your home base there, Lindsay? And it's such a great room. They're really great over there.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, you know, I mean, a lot of this music is just like living out fantasies. You know, who would ever put "Isn't Life Strange" in a set? But there's some just amazing things that happen with all the harmonies and that Justin Hayward guitar line that is the counter melody mm-hmm. in the chorus. And so every song of theirs seems to have something special like that going on. So it's just fun to finally get a chance to do this.
And also in between songs, Lindsay, you're a storyteller, and this is one of the things that makes seeing great moments in vinyl so unique. And unique, in addition to paying tribute to albums and bands and having, you know, a collection of some of the best musicians in the city on one stage, you also tell stories about the band, about the music, and about the albums in between songs. And that's what makes...
Well, absolutely. Yeah. You know, you get sort of a peek behind the scenes is a good way to put it. You know, you and I probably growing up were very similar. We'd sit down with our records and we'd look at the album covers and we'd read the liner notes and pore over who was playing what instrument on what song and all that sort of stuff.
Right.
So I try to provide backstory that goes a lot deeper than that, but it's that sort of immersing yourself in the experience of the album. You know, like Justin Hayward, for example, he had left school to pursue a career in music. He was only like 16 or 17 when he told his folks, you know, I want to be a musician. So still a teenager, seemed to be on his way. He'd been hired by a husband and wife duo to be their guitarist in England, and a British skiffle legend by the name of Lonnie Donegan. You've probably heard of him.
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah.
Connected to the Beatles in any way. But Lonnie Donegan signed up Justin Hayward to a songwriting publishing company. Justin was only 18. Does this sound familiar, like Alan Klein or Leonard Chess, someone like that? It may have seemed a dream come true for Justin at the time, but as with so many artists, it actually meant that Justin Hayward would not own the rights to any of the songs he would write for the next 8 years, which literally means everything we ever heard him sing with the Moody Blues in their heyday. He didn't earn a penny for any of those songs. And yet, the man just kept writing great songs.
Yeah, yeah. And by the way, they were inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame just this past year.
That was part of our inspiration, you know.
Yeah.
Phil and I were talking about that too. The fact that, I mean, you look at the history of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. You got the Kinks getting inducted early on, the Beatles, and the Rolling Stones, and who are the Moody Blues? They were peers. This one thing that came out from all the research that I did is that back in the mid '60s, these bands were all hanging out together. It's not like the Beatles and the Stones were way up here, and then all the other bands were down several tiers below. It's like the Moody Blues toured with the Beatles on the Beatles' last tour of England. They rode around in limousines together and stayed in the same hotels and pubs and that sort of thing. And the fact that there wasn't that separation, they both got to hang out with each other. Mike Pinder and Ray Thomas of the Moody Blues sang on a couple of Beatles songs. Fool on the Hill, I think, was one of them, and blanking out on the other one. But that period of time, there was a lot of... interbreeding isn't the right word, but, you know, a little cross-pollination between the bands.
Right. Now, Phil, you know, you mentioned just a few minutes ago that, you know, one of the many bands that you listened to when you were younger were the Zombies, and they're up for nomination this year for Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Yeah, they are, and I hope they get in. They really deserve it.
Yeah.
I mean, they're a very innovative group, and even though they didn't make a lot of albums together, they had so many great, strong singles. And, you know, Odyssey and Oracle on its own is just a landmark record, so I would love to see zombies get in.
I hope they do. I hope they do. And I think yeah. they will. I mean, this is not the first time they've been on the ballot, I think. I think they were on the ballot
yeah,
before.
Yeah, no. I think they've been on a while, actually. Not as long as the poor Moody Blues, but they've been on for a while, so yeah. hopefully they'll get in.
Yeah, well, all right. Phil, before we go back and start talking about Moody Blues again, and the concert, by the way, is this Thursday night at Martyrs, you just played a big gig with Material Reissue. You guys played at the Metro with Liz
yeah,
Phair.
With
Liz Phair. How fun was that, man?
It was really fun. You know, they have a history with Liz. You know, Jim was really close with Liz, and, you know, Mike and Ted maintained friendship with her. And she added a second show because she had sold out Saturday night, so they added Sunday, and we were invited. So I was thrilled, and it was a huge crowd, and it was a really, really fun show.
Yeah, I bet, really man. Fun. I bet. She's great, and that's yeah. obviously, you know, the Metro is such a great room, and there's,
yeah,
you know, there's
great.
So much history with her and with that room and with mm-hmm. Material Issue and everything. That must have been a really good time for you.
Absolutely. She had said in an interview even before we played the show, that she'd get emotional about it. I don't know if she did or not. She may have, but I know it was like kind of a homecoming for her, and, you know, having Mike and Ted there. They went up on stage and did Turning Japanese with her and the band. I thought that was pretty funny.
Yeah.
So there's some video of that. But, yeah, it was a really nice night. Really enjoyed it. So very happy to be part of it.
Yeah, very cool. Very, very cool. Lindsay, what's your connection with Moody Blues? Did you start listening to them when you were younger, too?
You know, a friend of mine in high school turned me on to them, a guy by the name of Ed Schmieding, and I've Googled him several times over the last several years just to see if he's still out there somewhere, and there's a Moody Blues quote, but he's never turned up. But he used to take me back to his room. He was staying with some friends. And because well, actually, friends was actually the parents of the woman that he had gotten pregnant. But anyway, he would sit on the floor of the bedroom there, and he would pull out his guitar and put on these Moody Blues records. And I didn't know a lot about music at the time, but he would point out counter melodies and John Lodge singing up way high with that falsetto voice that he did so well, and just all the things that went into their songs. And I really got an appreciation for them listening to that stuff back then.
Yeah, I started listening to them when I was young, too, and it was my dad who turned me on to them. My dad turned me on to the Moody Blues.
That's cool.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. My dad turned me on to a lot of music, you know, and, you know, I remember he sat me down one time, and he's like, here, listen to this. This song, this is Cream. And he played Cream for me, and I'd never, you know, I heard White Room, and my brain almost exploded.
Wow.
And so, yeah, you know, and... Yeah, because my parents were young when they had me, so they were listening to some hip stuff when I was, you know, when I was a kid.
That's really cool.
Yeah. So it was.
What was your first? The Moody Blues seem to be the fan base is going to be like a lot of guys and music professors and musicians and guys. Their dads like the Moody Blues, so we're hoping we get some girls to the show. But I think there will be some.
It was funny because I went. It was really funny. About last month, I went to go see one of my favorite bands ever, Buffalo Tom. They were in town for one night, and they played the Metro. Mm-hmm. And you know, it was the same night that Fall Out Boy was playing across the street at Wrigley. And as we were approaching the Metro, I was like, you know, because my parents were giving me a lift. We were coming from a movie. My parents gave me a lift to the Metro. As we were approaching the Metro, I said, "You can tell which are the Buffalo Tom fans and which are the Fall Out Boy fans because." The Buffalo Tom fans are all guys in their 50s. So all the kids, they're not going to see Buffalo Tom. They're going to see Fall Out.
Right.
I'm really excited about our show Thursday at Martyrs because our competition, I think, is Nine Inch Nails at the Aragon.
Oh, is that right?
I mean, given the choice of the two, it's not like people are going to be deciding one or the other.
Yeah, and the venues are far enough apart, though. You know what I mean? That also
there
is a thing. Yeah. So, all right, Lindsay, one more Moody Blues story.
Sure, right. Music critics may not have thought much of the band's philosophical musings, but their fans went out and bought 70 million copies of their albums over the last 50 years, earning the group a total of 18 gold and platinum records. And you think about it, 18 gold and platinum records, there were only the core seven that really we all think of as the Moody Blues albums. There's a lot of other albums they did rather well with, too. Just last year, Justin Hayward spoke to Forbes magazine about his success, and he was clearly modest about it. He said, there's an assumption that there's a plan about musicians and recording artists, but there isn't. It's throw it out there and see what happens. I've never chased a hit sound. Luckily, I've been with record labels who let me write what I wanted. But along with success comes a lot of failure. To be fulfilled, you must trust your own judgment and find your own identity. Find the sound you like and do that.
There you go. You know, I those numbers are staggering, and I guess I take it for granted. You know what I mean? I just, when I heard 18 platinum and gold records, 70 million albums sold, I just like, my God, the Moody Blues sold that many records? I don't know why.
I know.
Yeah.
It's incredible.
Yeah, it's nuts. Well, why don't we hear a little bit before we get you guys out of here? Why don't we hear a little more rehearsal from you guys, okay?
Sure, pick up.
All right, here we go. This is the Great Moments in Vinyl doing a little Moody Blues to take us out.
Nights in white satin, never reaching the end. Letters I've written, never meaning the same. Beauty I've always missed, with these eyes before. Just what the truth is, I can't say anymore. But I love you.
Yeah. Oh, we lost Lindsay. We lost Lindsay. Phil, that sounds great, though, man. Maybe we can get Lindsay back just so we can say goodbye. That sounds great. That is such a great song. And that was, I mean, obviously that was
an amazing song.
A massive hit for them.
Yeah, it's just a wonderful recording. It's got a magical thing to it. Yeah. They said that in interviews, too. It was definitely a magical recording.
Yeah. And I remember, you know, Days of Future Past was probably the one that got me into the band at first.
Yeah, it's such an interesting record. They melded pop music with the orchestrations, and it was actually an experimental record that Derham wanted to do for their stereo systems. And here it turned the band into like a very popular group, and they kind of started the format to what they were doing in the future. So it's very cool record.
Yep. Hey, Lindsay, welcome. We lost you there, but you're back. Thanks for coming back.
Yeah, I love what you were saying about an experimental record. I mean, really, you know, I was doing a little research, and I don't know if Phil was talking about what I said on Facebook, but, you know, back in the early days of stereo, well, mono was king back then.
Yeah.
And I'm not just talking Phil Spector, but, I mean, that's just how you thought about records. And when stereo came along, people didn't quite have the understanding that you could create this image of space. What they thought of was two mono speakers. That's why, you know, those Beatles albums and Beach Boy albums with extreme things happening, you know, all the vocals in one speaker and all the instruments in the other, because they saw them as two separate things. And then what Decca was doing, or Derham Records was doing, was this sense of space where you could spread the instruments across that sonic field and get this feeling of, you know, the spread of musicians in front of you. So that's what they wanted to explore, that with the Days of Future Past.
Well, it's great stuff. It's great stuff. And I'm sure you guys are going to have a great time, and it's going to be great. And it is on Thursday night, October 25th, at Martyrs, Great Moments in Vinyl, paying tribute to the great Moody Blues. Check out greatmomentsinvinyl.com. And there you go. Lindsay, I will...
Thank you.
Thanks for coming on. And Phil, I think you may be on my show sometime this week again. I think there's a chance.
For the Halloween thing?
No, for the Halloween yeah, for the Halloween show. So I think we might have you on. We might have you on again. So.
Well, good. I might be talking to you again.
Okay, buddy.
He's
take
a
care.
Right person.
Yes, there you go. All right, man. Lindsay Cochran and Phil Angotti, everybody, from Great Moments in Vinyl, paying tribute to the Moody Blues this Thursday, October 25th at Martyrs. And that's all coming up this week. So let's take a quick break here on 720 WGN. And welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio. We are here till 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5 and the great Steve Cochran at 6 with your morning drive. It's Tuesday, 2 for Tuesday. Yeah, man, 2 for Tuesday. We'll start that after the news. Get your requests in now. One artist, two songs, 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. And, yeah. So, we are have that all coming up, and coming up are the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN Radio. Hey, after the news, I got a story about Wheel of Fortune that we're going to talk about, and then I want to talk about the best game shows. What are your favorite game shows? Have you ever been on a game show? And we'll reminisce a little bit about game shows. And hey, Dan, Maybe you can, when we're talking about game shows, maybe you can find some of those game show themes to test me on. Because you always stump me on those.
Well, the website that, I mean, it's they're purposely obscure.
Yeah, they're like really obscure sort of game shows that lasted like one season. But I love game show themes. I love them. I love the music from game shows. It's fantastic. Of course, Match Game, please. But we're going to get into game shows and get some Wheel of Fortune news. And, of course, we mentioned last week, Price is Right is coming to Chicago live. Yeah. Watch the dude fall off the mountain live. So, hey, really quickly, I want to mention my next film club screening, you guys. It's getting closer, so we want you to reserve your seats now. It's our tribute to the late, great Burt Reynolds, one of his best movies, one of his most entertaining, the prison sports movie comedy, The Longest Yard, with Burt Reynolds is what we're showing. And that's very rarely does this movie get screened. And so we're really excited about it to pay tribute to Burt Reynolds. It'll be on Tuesday, November 13th. We're not doing it on the first Tuesday of the month because that's Election Day. So we're going to skip it and do it the next one. So it's November 13th, Tuesday, November 13th. It's only $10 to get in. Parking is free. It's at the AMC Rosemont 18, formerly MovieCo. Real easy to get to right off the expressway. If you don't want to drive, you take the blue line, get off at Rosemont. It's a 5-minute walk. And we want to pack the place and have a great time. There's really nothing like watching The Longest Yard with a big crowd having a great time. And I vividly remember the first time I saw that movie and the crowd just went nuts during it. It was just clapping and laughing and screaming. It was great. Saw it at the Ford City Theater back when it came out in 1974, and I loved it. So it's a classic, classic Burt Reynolds movie, and we want you guys to come out and see it. So reserve your seats now at amctheaters.com. That's amctheaters.com. And you go to the seating chart, pick the seats that you want. They will be there waiting for you on Tuesday, November 13th. Get there at 7, go to concession stand, grab some food, bring it up to the dining room. Have some dinner and have some drinks at the Full Bar, which is upstairs. We're in the Premier Theater, which is beautiful, big love seats, fantastic big curved screen with state-of-the-art digital projection and sound. And we will watch The Longest Yard. Everybody will get in there at 8 o'clock, sit down. I will introduce the movie, and then we will watch The Longest Yard together and have a great time. And then we'll talk about it afterwards, and I'll give you some facts and some trivia about it. And we'll do a little Q&A to close out the evening. So it's going to be great. Again, Tuesday, November 13th, get your seats now for The Longest Yard with Burt Reynolds. $10 parking is free. AMCtheaters.com. AMCtheaters.com to reserve your seats. It's going to be a really, really, it's going to be a really, really great night. I'm so excited to see it on the big screen. I haven't seen it on the big screen in many, 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 many years. So it's going to be fun. So get your tickets now. AMCtheaters.com, November 13th, The Longest Yard. Reserve your seats right now. All right. We're going to take a break. We got the news coming up, and then we're going to talk about this story about Wheel of Fortune and then talk about game shows in general. What are your favorites? What are the best? And that's all coming up right after this. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. It's Tuesday. That means it's 2 for Tuesday. Yeah, man, 2 for Tuesday. Get your requests in. One artist, two songs, 312-981-7200. Jim in Carbondale requesting Eddie Harris with Listen Here. And that's how it works. All right. Welcome back, everybody. We're here till 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5. My main man, Steve Cochran, at 6 for your morning drive. All righty, then. So we're going to talk game shows here. And you know, if you're a regular listener of this show, you know how much I love the game shows. I especially love like when the Game Show Network and when Buzzer, when they, you know, they show the old repeats. Those are fun, the old ones. Price is Right, which is one of the classic game shows of all time, is coming live. Drew Carey will not be there, but it might be Todd Newton, everybody. Hey, it's Todd Newton. It's going to be at the Chicago Theater, and they'll have all the great games, and you'll have a chance to win. And it'll be fun to do that, to go to that live. Everybody loves The Price is Right. And another classic, Wheel of Fortune, is making the news because Wheel of Fortune is going to give away its first house in show history. After more than 30 years on the air, Wheel of Fortune is raising the stakes for its next grand prize as part of the game show's Home Sweet Home giveaway. One lucky viewer will win a $350,000 home in Latitude Margaritaville, Jimmy Buffett's new retirement community in Daytona Beach, Florida. The Home Sweet Home episodes will run from October 29th through November 2nd, culminating in the residential giveaway made possible by a partnership between America's Game, Minto Communities, and Margaritaville Holdings. To enter the sweepstakes, fans must tune in to the Home Sweet Home programming, record the bonus round puzzle solution, and submit the answer to the show's website. Though an extra entry will be granted to each Wheel Watchers Club member, the winner will be selected at random. Are there Wheel Watcher Club members out here? Anybody? Are you a Wheel Watcher? 312-981-7200. After 34, what does it mean if you're in the Wheel Watchers Club? What kind of benefits do you get?
I think when they spin the wheel at the end, you're allowed to, you know, if you've got a certain combination of letters, you know, they'll be like, oh, your Wheel Watcher contestant today is QX5782. So you can play along at home and
win prizes. Oh, okay, all right. After 35 seasons, it's not easy, an easy feat to do something for the first time. But thanks to Latitude Margaritaville, we're doing that by giving away a house, Wheel of Fortune executive producer Harry Friedman said. Our viewers welcome us into their homes each night, so we're returning the favor by welcoming them, one of them, into a new home of their own. The beachside dwelling will serve as the grand prize, while 20 first prize winners will receive $500 Margaritaville gift cards to use at the Margaritaville online store. What do you buy at the Margaritaville online store? What do you get, like T-shirts and booze and stuff? Is that
parrot paraphernalia.
And parrots and stuff, yeah. I've been to one of those Margaritaville burger places. You ever been to the Jimmy Buffett Margaritaville burger?
I have not been to there.
I'm trying to remember where the hell we were. We were in Michigan. We were coming back. It was my ex-wife and my ex-mother-in-law and I were coming back from Michigan. And we stopped at one of those places. As well as you can go to the limited Margaritaville shops and resorts. On-air contestants taking part in the Home Sweet Home programming will compete for vacations to Margaritaville resorts in Florida, the Caribbean, and the Great Smoky Mountains. Buffett's Latitude Margaritaville is a community for persons aged 55 and older who wish to grow into a laid-back Florida lifestyle. The establishment includes single-family and villa homes and neighborhoods. By the way, just reading that, Dan, I am just 2 years away from qualifying to go to the Latitude Margaritaville community.
Oh, boy.
Oh, man. They have golf cart accessible
streets. All of a sudden, there's a job in the overnights that opens up in 2 years. We know where you are.
The establishment includes single family and villa homes. It's got neighborhoods, golf cart accessible streets, a town square set up for live music and dancing, a pool and beach entry, cabanas, tiki huts, a poolside bar, tennis, pickleball, and bocce ball courts. What the hell is pickleball? I know what bocce ball is. If I didn't know what bocce ball is, I'd have to have my Italian card completely taken away from me. What is pickleball? Am I missing something here? Pickleball and bocce ball courts, a fitness center with aerobic studio, an indoor lap pool, spa, fitness classes and wellness programs, a pet spa, and a dog park.
Pickleball is a paddle sport that combines elements of badminton, tennis, and table tennis. So it's like tennis, but on a much smaller court with much smaller rackets.
I have never heard of that. Have you ever heard of it?
No, I had not heard of that.
Wow. Why is it called pickleball? There are no pickles involved, right? You don't have to have a pickle in your mouth or anything when you're playing. I've never heard of that before. I never even knew that that was a thing. That's pretty crazy.
The sources claim the name pickleball was derived from that of the Pritchett family who created the game, pickles, or for the term pickle boat, referring to the last boat to return with its catch. That name came after it reminded me of the pickle boat and the crew where oarsmen were chosen from the leftovers of the boat. Somehow the idea of the name came for our dog Pickles, who was attached to naming of the game, but Pickle wasn't around, and so we named the game after our dog.
So basically that's what it came from. Pickles have absolutely nothing to do with this paddle game.
Apparently not.
Okay. Named after a dog. All right. John Colin, who is the CEO of Margaritaville, said, we can't think of a more fitting place for Wheel of Fortune to land than in Margaritaville. Regardless of their current latitude, we look forward to offering the show's contestants and viewers a chance to win a piece of paradise. All right, so get in there, man. Get into your home sweet home giveaway. You got a chance to win a house in Margaritaville where you can play all the pickleball you want. So that's the latest thing in Wheel of Fortune. Dan, you ever watch Wheel of Fortune?
Yeah, it was a favorite of Eileen's dad, so we watch it a lot when we're not watching.
It's a fun game. It is. It's fun. And you know they give away a lot of money on that show. I don't watch it regularly, but every time I watch it, I'm like usually like again reminded of how much money they give away on that show. You could win a lot of money on that show.
I've never seen the final question be less than $30,000.
I know it's crazy. And the amount of money that you can accumulate during the course of the game, they give away a lot. Well, that show's been on forever. And it's been a real favorite. Is it still on at 6:30?
Yes.
Still on at 6:30. And families watch it and bars watch it. People in bars watch it. Big game. Now I remember back in the day when Wheel of Fortune first started. I don't know if you remember. Dan, you probably weren't even around when Wheel of Fortune first started, but Chuck Woolery was the host.
Really?
Yeah, Chuck Woolery. I'm trying to remember who else hosted it, because I think they went through like three or four hosts before Sajak got it. And Sajak must have been hosting this. How long has Sajak been hosting the show? Like 35 years? It's got to be something along that. It's got to be at least 30 years that he's been hosting it. And Vanna White still doing the letters. Although she doesn't really have to do anything. She just has to walk over and touch them now. Remember when they had to actually turn the letters?
Yep.
But back in the day when it first started, you know, as just basically I believe just a daytime one of the many daytime game shows, because you know back in the day it was fantastic because there were game shows on during the day, and they're not anymore. That's not a thing anymore. Everything is dominated by daytime talk now. There aren't even that many soap operas. I think there's only like a couple of soap operas left. It used to be all game shows, all soap operas, all day, and I love that. But instead of getting cash, you would have to spend your money. You would have to shop, and for the crappiest items, the prizes on Wheel of Fortune were awful. I mean, you could get appliances and stuff, but it was like usually some like a porcelain dog, or some terrible piece of art, or like an end table, you know. That took up half the running time of the show back in those days, because like you would do they would solve the puzzle. So the puzzle would be solved. The winner would be announced. And then Chuck Woolery would go over and say, all right, we're going to shop in the jungle room. Okay. And then they show the jungle room, which has like really tacky furniture and stupid rugs and all kinds of stuff. And everything was overpriced because you had to shop. So it would be like, I'll take that rug for $1,200. And it was like a rug that was worth 40 bucks. And so you had to shop until you were out of money. If you had any money left over, it would go to a gift certificate. So you did not walk with cash on that show. Whereas now, obviously, as we said, you can get cars, you can get trips, and big amounts of cash. But man, and I'm telling you, that just watching the people shop was so ridiculous. And these terrible, like, second-rate pieces of furniture and art that they would... do you guys remember this? 312-981-7200. You remember when half of the show was puzzles and the other half was people shopping for crappy stuff that they had to buy with their money? And then we'll put the rest on a gift certificate for you. What? You know, the fun part of that show then were the puzzles. Like, the puzzles were fun. But the actual winning sucked because you had to buy these stupid items with your money and then end up with a $12 gift certificate. So you've got bad furniture and porcelain monkeys and a $12 gift certificate. That's what you walked away with back in the original days of Wheel of Fortune. But now it has some of the best prizes and the most cash that they give away. And it's still a fun show because you got the puzzles. So, all right. You know what I like on Wheel of Fortune? Are the puzzles, the clues that are like connected. You know what I mean? It's like you have to figure out the puzzle as well. As just what it is, you often have to connect them. That's always fun. So, All right. We're talking about Wheel of Fortune here. They're giving away a house. You can get involved on the Home Sweet Home days and get yourself a house courtesy of Jimmy Buffett and his parrot. So why don't we take a break? We come back. Let's open up the phone lines. What are your favorite game shows? Which ones do you watch? What were your favorites of the past? Have you ever been on a game show? As you know, our good friend Brian Noonan has been on a couple of game shows. I know he was on Greed. Speaking of Chuck Woolery hosted Greed. And we'll talk about that kind of stuff. 312-981-7200 here on 720 WGN. Two for Tuesday continues. Jim in Carbondale requested Eddie Harris, and that's Les McCann with Compared to What? 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Two for Tuesday, man, here! That's one artist, two songs. Get your requests in now. 312-981-7200. How's it going, everybody? We're live in the Allstate Skyline Studio. And, yeah, we are talking about game shows because Wheel of Fortune is giving away a house as part of their Home Sweet Home run of shows. And you could win a house. Jimmy Buffett built it. No, he didn't. I don't want to say he built a house. So, yeah. And now we wanted to talk about your favorite game shows. What are the best ones? Which ones do you watch? And we can, you know, get into all the game shows. Remember, you know, obviously in the early 2000s when the game shows, the primetime game show made that huge, you know, sort of comeback with Who Wants to Be a Millionaire? And then all of the other ones that came, you know, they were cheap to produce. And that's why for a while there, for a couple of years, solid couple of years, those primetime game shows, you know, like The Weakest Link and Greed and Millionaire, just dominated the airwaves for a while. And game shows made a huge comeback. And you have the Game Show Network, which shows original game shows that are new and not so new. But they used to, Game Show Network used to be fantastic. It's not really anymore. Buzzr is now, has kind of taken over for the Game Show Network because Buzzr shows all the old game shows. They do a black and white thing in the morning. You know, I think it's like between 7 and 9 a.m. They show all the classic black and white, like What's My Line, Names the Same, To Tell the Truth, all that stuff. And now they've actually moved it up a little bit, and they've been doing some of the late 60s, early 70s To Tell the Truth and What's My Lines, and those are fantastic. So, but it's you know, I've loved game shows my whole life. You know, grew up watching all the classics. And 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Dan in Michigan says, I'm 51 years old, and back in the early 80s when I was watching late-night TV on a Saturday night on WFLD 32, they had You Bet Your Life reruns with Groucho. I became addicted to the show, loved when the duck would drop down with the secret word. That show was my favorite game show. You know, the thing about that, about You Bet Your Life with Groucho, was that was on weeknights. And maybe they showed it on Saturdays, but I remember watching that every weeknight. It was like, right, you know, they would do like stuff like they would do like MASH, and they would do Sanford and Son. They would do Make Me Laugh, speaking of game shows. And of course, The Honeymooners. And then, you know, that's when they would do the reruns of You Bet Your Life. The thing about that show was it was like sort of disguised as a game show, you know. And the reason I say that is because the reason people tuned in wasn't really to see the game. Because, you know, a couple would come out and eventually, you know, George Fenneman would announce, he was the announcer, George Fenneman, and he would announce, they would say the secret word at the beginning of the show. The duck would come down, they would tell you the secret word. You know, the contestants wouldn't know it. If they said it, they would get $100, and the duck would come down and they would get $100. And then they were asked sort of general trivia questions in different categories. So it was just a real simple thing. But the reason why people watched that show was not so much about the game itself, but it was the interaction between Groucho and the contestants. That's what that game was about. That's what that show was about. The game was secondary. The game took a back seat, but they would bring out these really interesting, weird people who sometimes would have like a special skill, or they did something weird, or, you know, so it was something that Groucho could latch onto, have a conversation and make a bunch of jokes and get a bunch of laughs. And then maybe they can, one of the contestants, you know, would give you an example of what they would do. They would demonstrate. That's what that show was really about. And then, oh yeah, by the way, we've got these trivia questions. You can win some money. So that, you know, that's, it was really about the byplay and the interaction between Groucho and the contestants. That's what made that show special. Okay, let's see. We got a bunch of people who are on the line here talking about, people love game shows, Dan. They love them. Dave is in Maryland on WGN. Hi, Dave.
Hey, good morning. How are you, Nick? Long time no talk.
Thanks, man. Good. What do you got?
Well, I got three things. First of all, you just mentioned You Bet Your Life, and just a couple weeks ago, we were visiting in Wildwood, New Jersey, and at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, I was just channel surfing. They had a network called JLTV, Jewish Life TV, and they had an actual original You Bet Your Life from 1954, and they showed the whole thing straight through with the Chrysler DeSoto commercials and everything.
Oh, that's cool.
I mean, it was unbelievable.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah. That's really, really cool.
Yeah. And the funniest part of that was there was a 78-year-old woman on there who insisted that Groucho put a cigar out.
Oh, really?
So eventually, she said, "Now I'm not going to say anything until you put your cigar out." So he actually put a cigar out, and then he whipped another cigar out.
Groucho, all right.
And he didn't light it up.
He didn't light
it. So anyway,
okay.
I've been on two TV game shows in my life. In 1984, I was one of the original contestants on The Wheel of Fortune.
Oh.
When it was brand spanking new.
Now,
it was 2 years old at the time. And actually, earlier that year, they had tryouts here in Washington, D.C. And I was one of 20 people who was eligible to go out there. And you're right. I won exactly $1,200 worth of junk. I solved a puzzle. The puzzle was Motorcycle Escort. And then when I went shopping, I bought some crappy tennis clothes and some Gucci watches that broke a few weeks later.
That's it. That's what I'm saying. That it used to be terrible. You'd have to spend all the money on a bunch of crap. It was terrible.
Yes. It was horrible.
Yeah.
But anyway, I did win a round, and I missed going to the final round by $100. But I still remember that the puzzle I figured out was Motorcycle Escort. Now, in 2012... I was on The Price is Right, and I won a car.
Wow.
On YouTube, if you want to put in the YouTube search engine, the five-tag price game for The Price is Right, and the date was April 3rd, 2012, 4/3/12. You will see me standing next to Drew Carey, and you will see within 3 minutes and 46 seconds how it changed my life.
Wow. And then what game did you play to win the car?
It was called the Five Tags Price Game.
Oh, I know that one.
Yeah, and the date was April 3rd, 2012.
Okay, we'll have to check it out.
If you put that through on YouTube, you can see me, and there's one of the greatest bloopers ever. You will see it there that Drew Carey makes.
Okay.
And it's a riot.
All right. Well, Dave, thanks for the call.
Okay.
All right, thanks for the call. I gotta get to news, buddy, okay? Take care.
That's great. Bye.
All right, there you go. What a car on The Price is Right. How about that? And $1,200 worth of crap from Wheel of Fortune. Oh, man. All right, we got a break. Everybody hang on. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. And we're talking all game shows here on WGN.
Yeah!
I like this twofer. Get your requests in. 312-981-7200. 301 area code requesting John Carpenter's Halloween theme. We're going to hear another John Carpenter theme then. Yeah! So, yeah, it's Halloween time. Next Wednesday morning is Halloween. So we'll do our spooktacular. Well, first, we're going to talk to the guys from Movember. Because, as you know, November is Movember. And it's a great charity. And I participate every year. So on November 1st, I'm going to shave off my beard and my mustache and everything. Shave it clean shaven, and then just grow a mustache. That's what it's all about, raising awareness for men's health and money. And you can follow along on my daily updates. I take a picture of my stupid face, and you can give some money to Movember. So we'll have the guys from Movember on, and then we're going to launch into all things spooky and scary with our annual Halloween spooktacular. And I'm thinking about getting my future ex-wife, the lovely Dana DiLorenzo, on the show just to talk Ash versus Evil Dead. And she's making a lot of horror convention appearances. In fact, she's going to be in Minneapolis this weekend at a horror convention. Her and Lee Majors will be representing Ash versus Evil Dead. Good old Lee, her and the $6 million man. She'll be hanging out with the $6 million man. She was hanging out with me, the $30 man, the other day on Sunday night. So... it's a big difference. So anyway, we might get her on just to talk horror, and we'll do all kinds of scary stuff. We'll bust out the scary sounds with Fartula, and Count Fartula and Fartenstein will be there. And so, all right, we are talking about game shows. The Wheel of Fortune game show is giving away a house for the first time. So that got us to thinking about great game shows. Got some texts here. 331 area code says, my favorite game show is Match Game with Gene Rayburn. That's the best. This is the best. I love it when some of the cast of the Carol Burnett Show made a surprise appearance on the show. That was fantastic. That's one of my favorites. I'll tell you what, though, man. You know, Dawson in the early, you know, the early part before he outstayed his welcome was great. And, of course, you can't top Brett Summers and Charles Nelson Reilly. Don't even play around. And Gene Rayburn was, like, the greatest host ever. Great theme song, everything. The new version with Alec Baldwin doesn't even hold a candle. You know, we had Dick DiBartolo, who's been on the show many times. He wrote questions for the original Match Game, created Dumb Dora and Old Man Periwinkle. Those were all his creations, and he could not sit through an entire episode of the new one because it's not double entendre. It's just blue. They're just working blue now. 870 area code says, wait, Nick, you skipped right over the part that Jimmy Buffett owns and runs a retirement home. Yeah, no, that was in the news a long time ago, right, Dan?
Yeah, I mean, it's a thing.
No,
I mean,
it's legit. It is.
But it is surprising.
It is, that, yeah.
Mr. Yeah. Parrot Head.
Yeah. 312 area code says, pickleball is played mostly by seniors on indoor tennis courts in Park Ridge and other suburbs. What's it? It's exclusive to Park Ridge? And other suburbs. Okay, I didn't know. I've never heard of pickleball. This was the first time I ever heard of pickleball. You can play it with a parrot. All right, let's get to the phones. Here's Judy on WGN. Hi, Judy.
Hello, Nick. How are you doing?
All right.
Do you remember way back in the, I want to say, middle 60s? Now, you were probably a pup then. But Alan Ludden hosting Password.
Yeah.
And how he fell in love on air almost immediately with Betty White.
Yep, and they ended up getting married.
And they got married almost 6 months later.
Yep, they got married and they stayed married.
To this day, she always talks about her beloved Alan.
Yeah.
Which is great because the woman is, what, 95 now?
She's 96.
And she's dynamic yet.
Yeah, 96 years old. And Alan Ludden died young.
He died of cancer.
Yeah, he died young and suddenly. And it was a really sad. Yep. It was a really sad time for Betty White because they were. It sure was.
But then she turned her life to pets, and I think she named a couple of them Al or whatever.
Yeah.
But I mean, and I always prayed literally that I would find someone, you know, in my lifetime, which I did. Which I am still married to the man,
yeah.
But he's now in a nursing home.
Oh, okay.
And he's 78. But, I mean, he ended up in broadcasting, and he was in broadcasting for 40 years.
Mm.
And he was behind the cameras all the time.
All right.
Here in Milwaukee. And he started out in Illinois because he went to school in Illinois for broadcasting.
Mm.
And he started out in Rockford. And then from Rockford, he moved to Madison. And from Madison, he moved to Milwaukee. And that's where we met.
There you go.
And congratulations
on that, Judy.
Thank you.
Okay,
thank you
have
very
a good
much.
Morning.
And yes, and also, just one more second. Thank you for the update on Steve and Johnny. Are they okay?
Yeah. They didn't suffer a great deal of damage. They're in Panama City Beach,
right.
And on the other side is Panama City. Panama City got hit really hard. On the other side where Johnny and Steve and Johnny's house is, Panama City Beach didn't get nearly as hit as Panama City.
Okay. And her dad's fine, okay?
Yes, everything. Everything is good.
Okay.
All right, Judy.
All right, thank you so much.
Sure,
take care. Bye-bye.
Yeah. All right, let's see. Here's Lake Geneva Dan. Hey, Dan.
Hey, Nick. Up here it's Jeopardy. And two funnies, my dog howls during Final Jeopardy, and it's on twice a day up here. We watch it, and then when my friends and nieces come home from school, we watch it again, and they think we're geniuses.
Oh. So they repeat it. And then you guys act like you didn't watch it earlier, and then you guys get all the answers. That's great. That's really great, man. You know, that would have come. Dan, thanks for the call. That would have come in great, though, Dan. When I used to hang out in the afternoons and have some cocktails at Simon's, because we would bet at Simon's. You would bet now. So what would be great is. You couldn't play the jukebox. The jukebox would go off 3:30, As soon as Jeopardy started, because the old timers who sat at the end of the bar during the day and did the day drinking, they would be there. And you, if you walked in and tried to play the jukebox when the Jeopardy was on, they'd kill you. They would kill you. And it's like, it was the old timers, man. It was the hardcore daytime old timers who've been there since 11 a.m. You know what I mean? And this is the end of their session of drinking. And most of them would just, like, you know, nurse a beer or two during. It's not like they would get hammered, but they would just sit there and nurse a couple of beers and watch. And then Jeopardy was sort of the way that their day at Simon's ended. And you would bet on it. You would bet on Final Jeopardy to see if you could get it. And everybody would answer out loud. And they also did that. They did that at Ricochet's, too. Ricochet's did the same thing. But if you had the advantage, like Geneva Dan did, of being able to see it earlier that day and then coming in, you could just kill every day. Whenever I watch Jeopardy, you know, there are times when I just feel like, I think like most people, and I feel really stupid when I'm watching it. And you know, like when I, at the beginning of the first round of Jeopardy and beginning of Double Jeopardy, it's always like, you know, whenever they unveil a category and there's not like a pop culture or a movie category or a music category, I'm like, oh man, you know, when they're all like educational things that you should know, not superficial, stupid crap that is filled inside my brain. I always get disappointed. I'm not going to do well watching this. Where's the movie questions? What are we talking about here? Geography. Get out of here with that. Potpourri. All right, here's Glenn on WGN. Hi, Glenn.
Hey, good morning, Nick.
All right.
How you doing?
All right.
Hey, my question was, actually, I thought about this when a guy called up and said he won the car. Is if you win that house, do you have to pay the taxes on it?
I would imagine you do. I would imagine you do, yeah. I mean, you got to pay the taxes on anything that you win on a game show.
Yeah, it's kind of sucky, but, you know, it is what it is.
Yeah.
I did like the original Password.
Yeah, Password's a great game. Great. Classic.
Yeah.
Classic
but
game.
I was just curious about that.
No, yeah, so. you got to pay taxes on everything you win on a game show. All right, Glenn, thanks. That's like all these people who are thank you, Glenn. All those people who are doing the, hey, Dan, you didn't buy a lottery ticket, did you?
I did not.
Okay. Neither did I. But it's, what is it? It's up to like $1 billion, right?
1.6, yeah.
$1.6 billion. $1.6 billion. But then what is that? You get taxes. What do you get? $900,000 or something?
Well, it depends on.
$900 million.
Yeah.
Sorry.
You know, lump sums and you know, trusts and things like that. But yeah, I mean.
You got to pay the taxes.
I won't kick it out of bed for eating.
No. It's good point. Let's see. Trucker Rich says, I grew up in Rockford and my parents loved watching Wheel of Fortune. However, my dad would watch it on the porch on the local station and my mom would watch it in the living room on ABC7. There was a 10-second delay on my mom's set, so my dad would yell out the answer sooner than my mom, and it went on until she figured it out. That's hilarious. That's similar to Lake Geneva Dan. Trucker Rich's dad had a 10-second advantage on his mom. 312 area code says, I love the ceramic Dalmatian. Yeah, there you go. That's what you end up. That's one of the top prizes when you would shop on the old school Wheel of Fortune. Oh, I got to get the ceramic Dalmatian for $1,500. It's only worth $40. Let's see. Jesse said, growing up, I watched the Bozo Show, Name That Tune, and Double Dare. Name That Tune was an interesting. That was a great show. Name That Tune was a great show. I can name that tune in three notes. I could name it in one. Well, then name that tune. You know that's how Kathy Lee Gifford got her start.
I did not know that.
Singing on Name That Tune. She was like the singer on Name That Tune. Take it away, Kathy Lee. And I know Jim Lang hosted Name That Tune for a while. I think they went through like three or four hosts on Name That Tune, at least. And I'm trying to remember who the other hosts were. I know Jim Lang hosted it for a while. That's when I remember the most. The ceramic Dalmatian. 301 area code says, I always loved Hollywood Squares, even the short-lived Saturday morning version, Storybook Squares. Hollywood Squares is legendary. Peter Marshall? Yeah.
Your hosts of, or should I say presenters, according to Wikipedia, were Red Benson, Bill Cullen, George DeWitt, Richard Hayes,
Dennis James, Tom Kennedy, and Jim Lang.
Oh, that's right. Tom Kennedy and Dennis James. I remember that. Yeah. That was for Name That Tune. Hollywood Squares, you had Peter Marshall, who was Pete LeCocq's dad. Pete LeCocq, ex-Cub baseball player. So Peter Marshall was the host, and of course your center square on the classic Hollywood Squares, your center square was the legendary Paul Lynn, who was hilarious on that show. Hollywood Squares was, you know, Hollywood Squares was an incredibly popular show, and they did a combination match game Hollywood Squares at one point. And what's his name? Bowser from Sha Na Na was the host. He used his real name, John Bauman. Bowser from Sha Na Na was the host. And they would split it. It was an hour long, and it would split between match game and Hollywood Squares. And then the other Hollywood Squares, let's see what they had. As when I do was John Davidson hosted Hollywood Squares for a while, and your center square on the John Davidson version was Jim Bullock from Too Close for Comfort. He played Monroe, and he was on that talk show with Tammy Faye Baker. Jim Bullock. I think on the John Davidson version that was your center square, and then Tom Bergeron hosted Hollywood Squares, and Whoopi Goldberg was the center square. I remember at one time Shadow Stevens was on.
He was the narrator / bottom left.
Yeah, he was on the show. He's in a square, and he was like the voiceover guy. Shadow Stevens, legendary. Yeah, Shadow Stevens, man. Yeah. Jay says, I like the Movie Game, which aired evenings after supper in the mid-60s on WFLD-TV. The host was Army Archer to Variety Magazine, and with movie celebrities, it was similar to What's My Line. I remember that, too. They had reruns of that. They showed reruns of that. I thought that show was great. They should do that one again. And then 773 says, I loved Press Your Luck and its spinoff Whammy with Todd Newton. Hey, Todd Newton, man. Yeah, they brought the Whammy back about 10 years ago, brought Todd Newton out, dusted him off. They changed the name from Pressure Luck to Whammy. So they did that. They should have had, what's his name? David Koechner.
That's a good idea.
From Anchorman. He should have been those. Whammy! All right, let's take a break here. We got some weather here, and then after the weather, we'll take another break. And phone calls, texts, we're talking about game shows. And Dan's going to throw a few game show theme songs at me to see if I can guess them. These are really obscure. I've not my track record's not real strong for these.
I'm kind of proud of the fact that you don't know these, because they usually last a season, if that.
It's so funny. All right, we'll take a break for the weather, and here it is. I can't. I'm so thrilled that the request of this, that the listener requested that. It's 301 area code to complete our 2 for Tuesday. Yeah, for John Carpenter. That's his band, the Coupe de Villes. And that's the theme from Big Trouble in Little China. They had a music video for it and everything, Dan, because they, you know, 20th Century Fox thought that movie was going to be a big hit, and they thought they were going to have like a hit song. Nope. That's Carpenter, Nick Castle, who's a director in his own right. He is the Shape. He played Michael Myers in the first Halloween. Had him on the show. Met him several times. Tommy Lee Wallace, also a director, directed Halloween 3. And so those are all his buddies. They were in a band a long time ago, and they recorded, I mean, in the 60s. They were in a band like in the 60s, the Coupe de Villes. And then Carpenter and the Coupe de Villes. The video is ridiculous. It's really, it is because the movie came out in 1986. And as you can tell by some of the electronic instrumentation on that song, it's very, very, very 80s. But I love that song. I love it, man. And the movie tanked, unfortunately. Of course, like most of John Carpenter's movies, Big Trouble in Little China, not a critical success at all, and it completely bombed at the box office. No one went to see it, and yet now it's considered a classic, and they want to remake it with The Rock. Where the hell were you people in 1986? Nobody saw it in 86. The same thing happened with The Thing. Nobody went to go see The Thing in 1982 when it came out. Now it's considered one of the greatest science fiction horror movies ever made. Now it's a classic. Where the hell were you? And it almost ended his career, that movie. So, Anyway, it makes me angry because people should understand. They should have understood the genius of John Carpenter years ago, and it's only in retrospect, 25 years later. I talked to Carpenter about this. I'm like, people don't like your movies until it's 25 years later. He's like, I know. I don't know what to say. Anyway, John Carpenter twofer. Yeah! 312-981-7200. Here's Don on WGN. Hi, Don.
How you doing? How are you?
All right.
I just want to say I love your show.
Thanks, man.
And I like that show, Concentration, and The Price is Right. But I do have to agree with you with Jeopardy. I did horrible, man. I feel like...
You know,
I don't even know. You feel like a stump or something when you're watching it with people.
You know what's funny, Don? You know what's even worse? Is when they do College Jeopardy, when they do College Week, because then you feel even more stupid. Because it's like some 20-year-old kid, you know, it's College Jeopardy. That's when you feel even dumber, is during College Jeopardy Week. So
I know, and then you feel bad with that. That's the most, when you feel terrible with that. That's true.
Yeah.
And then also you're like, you went to school, and if you went to college, it's like, I should know something, right?
I should, right, but I don't. So,
no.
All right, Don, thanks, buddy.
All right, have a good one.
All right. You want to throw one of the themes at me real quick here? All right. And if I can't name it, then I might ask for some hints. Wow. I gotta tell you, man, I love game show themes. I love them. Can you clue me on here?
This was 82,
okay.
1981-82.
All right.
Featured Alex Trebek, sorry.
Alex Trebek?
Yes, as the host.
All right, he hosted several shows.
Mm-hmm. The announcer was John Barton.
Ooh.
Was a Canadian/American game show.
Oh, you're throwing a curveball at me here.
Canadian Bill would be very familiar with this show.
And the announcer, because you know the announcer that they used a lot in that time period, Johnny Olson. Johnny Olson is your announcer. He announces Price is Right. No, not now. Now he doesn't. I think Johnny Olson passed away, but he used to host Price is. He used to voice over Price is Right. He did Match Game. He did a ton of them. Okay, Canadian. Let's see. Alex Trebek hosted it. This could
featured contestants attempting to predict the outcome of survey questions conducted to the studio audience.
That sounds like Family Feud.
This show ended up going bankrupt, resulting in many contestants and staff never getting paid.
Oh my God!
Oh, maybe that's why Alex is so angry.
Yeah. Oh my God. Well, let's see. Supermarket Sweep.
Pitfall.
Pitfall?
Pitfall.
I do remember the name. And it's also a game, a board game, Pitfall, isn't it?
And a video game.
And
for
a video game.
Yeah.
That's right. All right. Well, more of that to come to make me look stupid. Here's Tom on WGN. Hi, Tom.
Hi. I like your show. Listen every morning.
Thank you.
I'm a big fan of Jeopardy, and in the early 80s, I lived out in the Phoenix area for a while, and there was a local tavern, and we'd have a running pool. Everybody put a dollar in, and
yep,
the first one to get the final Jeopardy question. Well, Jeopardy aired an hour earlier in Chicago, so I'd call back home, and I'd find somebody who watched Jeopardy, and I'd have the final Jeopardy answer. They thought I was a genius, but I think I threw my dollar down one time and said Mary Queen of Scots or something. They didn't even have to ask the question yet. I got busted, so.
Yeah, man, you can't do the answer without the question first, man.
Yeah,
that's going to give you away.
I think I had to buy a few rounds. The jig was up.
That's funny. That's funny.
Hey, I like the show. I listen every morning.
Thanks,
it makes
man.
My drive in pleasurable. Thanks.
I appreciate it, Tom. Take care, buddy.
Bye.
That's great. I love all these cheating game show stories. These are fantastic. It's awesome. Hey, coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN Radio, and that's coming up right after we take a break. You know, it's funny. Dan, I was looking up at the screen, you know, where I can see into the newsroom. And when that song started, Vic put his hands over his ears.
Gag reflex happens when that song comes on.
It's only good, but you put your hands over your ears with your headphones on, so it's only going to get louder.
That's true. It was just a sign to you that.
Yeah, no, I can't stand that song either. Oh. So it's brutal. Ike and Country Club Hills, Bette Midler, Wind Beneath My Wings. And the reason why is because Count Fartula says something about the wind beneath his wings. Oh, I see why. Now, see, there's a reason why then. Hold it.
Open the coffin. Let me out.
No, that's not. Hold on. We got to just see what.
Sink your teeth into that.
Now, see, he's not going to say it. Because, you know.
No, come on, Fartula. Play along.
Fartula, you know, it's a bit.
That garlic gets me every time.
Come on, dude.
He's hard to work with.
The wind beneath my wings.
Hey! Thank you. There it is. Not to be outdone, but...
Wrong switch, Igor.
All right, these are my two friends. These are my best friends. That's what it's come down to, Dan. My two best friends on the planet.
Are they going
to
be your groomsmen at your and Dana's?
Me and Dana, yeah. When Dana and I get married, yeah, absolutely. That was it.
Trick or treat.
Lee Major's going to walk her down the aisle.
You know, her dad did approve of me marrying her.
That's right.
I want you to know that, because I met her dad at Flashback. So he did approve. So... Doesn't know me very well, clearly. Well, there you go. Count Fartula did play along eventually. He's a tough guy, man. He makes a lot of demands. You should see their rider.
He's old and cranky.
He's just trying to get some. By the way, I told Dana that story. The old man trying to get some wedges. I told her Sunday night that story. She's saying that now all the time. I'm just an old man trying to get some wedges. So, anyway, we're talking game shows. And Dan's going to play some more obscure game show themes that I won't know, but we can always discover, you know, some of these new shows. Like, who knew Alex Trebek was a host of a Canadian game show called Pitfall that went bankrupt, and many of the people who won prizes didn't? Who knew that? That's a fun fact that you can throw out at a party tomorrow. Because, you know, lots of parties happen on Wednesdays. It's a big party night. Especially parties where you can talk about Alex Trebek in a Canadian game show. That is really interesting. All right, if you guys want to jump in, what are your game shows that you love? 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200 for talk and text. All right, so I'm looking at this list of the greatest game shows of all time. And the first one, number 50 here, because it's the 50 greatest game shows of all time, just to jar our memories and talk about some of this stuff. Three's a Crowd. Are you familiar, either of you guys familiar with Three's a Crowd? Dan, are you familiar with Three's a Crowd?
I am not.
Mm-mm, no.
Now, and I'm not talking about the spinoff of Three's Company with Ritter and whoever the hell played his wife. Here's the setup for Three's a Crowd. Let me just preface this by saying this is a Chuck Barris production. So just know that if it's a Chuck Barris production, it might not be the most tasteful thing in the world, considering, you know, he did the dating game, Newlywed Game. He did the Gong Show. He was responsible for a lot of game shows that would push the envelope in terms of taste. It was very questionable stuff. So here's the setup, Dan. Are you ready for this?
Yes.
And I'm going to need you to look up the guy who hosted it, his name, because he had a horrible perm. That's the only thing I remember is that this was like an early 80s show, late 70s-ish. And this is the premise. This is the honest premise of this show. A married couple comes on the show with the husband's secretary. And then they're asked questions to see if the wife or the secretary know the husband better. That's the setup. I'm not kidding. That's the setup for the show. And like clearly there were several guests on this show, several contestants who were sleeping with their secretary. These guys were sleeping. There's no question about it. And that's pretty much, you know, you'd win money, but I think more than anything else, the wives discovered whether or not their husbands were screwing around with them with their secretaries. And that's the setup. And it was one of the most uncomfortable shows to watch because they did like a Chuck Barris like tribute to tastelessness on Game Show Network some years ago. And they ran a bunch. They ran this every night. They ran Three's a Crowd every night. And it was so uncomfortable to watch. I mean, it was just ridiculous. And you could see the women getting really mad, and then sometimes the wives getting really mad, and then sometimes the guests, maybe the secretaries really do care for the husband and get mad when they kiss the wife. I'm telling you, Dan, it was unbelievable. And I don't know how long it was on. I couldn't have been more than
one season.
One season. All right, who was the host?
The original host was Jim Peck.
Jim Peck, that's him.
Narrated by Johnny Jacobs.
Yeah, Johnny Jacobs did a lot of those shows. But Jim Peck, worst perm ever. Like if you Google that guy, what year was it on? Like 79, 80, 78, 79, something like that?
79 to 80, yes.
Okay. So that's a relatively obscure one, but it was so notorious because I think, and if I'm not mistaken, when they showed it on the Game Show Network, they had like some facts about it, and I think it caused like 8-9 divorces as a result of this game show Three's a Crowd, where the husband and wife team up with the secretary, and I think it caused divorces. I remember watching it and just my jaw hit the floor. I mean, even for Chuck Barris, it was like, come on, man. But yeah, real game. Three's a crowd.
You know, it does list here that they did a reboot of it with Alan Thicke in 1999 that aired on the Game Show Network. But yeah. I mean, that is a prime reboot.
Yeah,
you know, opportunity, because everybody has a work wife, and so like, who knows you better, your work wife or your real life? You know, like Vic could go on, it would be Jenny and Esmeralda, and yeah, like which one knew him better? I'd watch that.
Yeah, that's so funny. But the thing that, you know, the icing on the cake for me was his perm, was Jim Peck's perm and the three-piece suits, because it was 1978, 79, 79, something, 80, and three-piece suits, bad, you know, like big, thick ties with three-piece suits. That was the look, and he embraced that look and the perm. He was just a magnificent specimen. Now, I don't know the theme to that one. Do they have the theme song to that one? I don't remember. The theme song to that one, because again, that one only lasted a year, but I mean, nobody would have known about it had it not been, you know, had it not caused actual divorces and been so completely tasteless. Do we have Three's a Crowd?
From the Chuck Barris stages in Hollywood, California, it's Three's a Crowd, the game that determines who knows the husband best, his wife or his secretary. And now, let's meet the husband. Husband number one is the owner of his own business, and he prays that his business won't fall off. He's Jesse Fontanet. Husband number two is the president of one business, the senior vice president of another business, and his favorite position at home is none of your business. Welcome, Bard Bazaar. Husband number three is a rock hound, which means every Saturday he puts on a St. Bernard suit and gets his rocks off the driveway with his teeth. He's Fowler Hawks.
What?
Those are our husbands for today. And here's your host, the star of Three's a Crowd, Jim Peck.
That is a wacky theme song. That is a wacky theme. What the hell were those intros? What was that? Your favorite, his favorite position at home is none of your business. Is Jim Peck got? Is he sporting his perm?
Yes, yes.
Three's a Crowd. I can't believe they rebooted that with Alan Thicke. Why don't I remember that? 1999. I was obsessed with Game Show Network in 1999. I don't remember the reboot. All right. The stupidest thing. Oh, man, that's fantastic. From the Chuck Barris Studios. Fantastic. All right. We got a break here for the weather, and then after the weather, we'll come back from the break, and we're talking more game shows, and if you want to jump in, 312-981-7200. Anybody watch Three's a Crowd? I'm just curious now. I couldn't take my eyes off of it. It was like watching a train wreck. 312-981-7200. It was a Halloween twofer. Yeah, man! It was a Bette Midler twofer. That was Ike and Country Club Hills requesting Bette Midler, I Put a Spell on You from Hocus Pocus. Do you know that that movie now, people like it?
Yeah, it's going to re-release.
And people, I had no idea that there was such a following for Hocus Pocus. People love that movie. I saw it when it came out. I thought it sucked, but it was a long time ago. But now suddenly, what, did John Carpenter direct it? Is that why people now like it? Wow. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline studio here until 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5. My main man, Steve Cochran, will be here for your Tuesday morning drive at 6. 312-981-7200 is the phone number for talk, text, and Triple Play Thursday. Or not Triple Play Thursday. What am I, moving 2 days ahead already? Two for Tuesday. So there you go. We're talking about game shows. Wheel of Fortune, as we discussed a little bit earlier, for the first time ever, is actually giving away a house. And so we've been talking about some of our favorite game shows, and Dan's been playing a few game show theme songs for me that, you know, are from pretty obscure shows. And, we, of course, we just discussed the genius that is Three's a Crowd. And let's see. Here is Doc on WGN. Hi, Doc.
Hey, good morning.
Morning.
Hey, I always like the one-liners on Hollywood Squares, and I want to share a couple of my favorites that I've never forgot.
Yeah.
Once they asked Paul Lynde, they said, what's the first thing you remove from the chicken to make chicken tetrazzini? And he answered, the rooster. And then once they asked George Gobel, they said, men cheat more in 1 month than any other. And the correct answer was December, but they ask him the question, and he looks up in the air and he goes, I figure about the 8th month.
That's fantastic. That is great.
All right. Good morning.
Thank you, Doc. That is so funny. That is hilarious. I figure about the 8th. That was similar to what, you know, Dan, they have these compilations of really stupid Family Feud answers that people give. And it goes all the way back to, you know, Richard Dawson, all the way up through Peterman and Home Improvement Dude and Louis Anderson. And now, of course, Steve Harvey. And some of them are so funny. One of them, Richard Dawson couldn't go on. This was during the big round at the end, you know, the bonus round. Because it's being timed, and he had to stop the timer. You know, he had to stop the timer because he could not stop laughing. And he said the question. I'm paraphrasing the question because I don't remember it word for word. But it was a question about pregnant women, and it was like, in what month do pregnant women begin to show? And the girl said February. And he lost it. He could not get it back together. It's classic. I may have mixed it up. She may have said another month, you know, but that's basically what it was. What month? They said February. Man, here's Greg on WGN. Hi, Greg.
The rooster. Hey, imagine if I'm a fan of Buzzer TV, and I really got into watching the original version of What's My Line. Imagine if John Charles Daly from What's My Line went on to host the Newlywed Game.
Yeah.
You know, saying the word whoopee and asking these double entendre questions and giving these long-winded, wordy explanations to the contestants, and it just sails over their heads.
Yeah, I got to say, you know, Greg, I'm a fan of Buzzer, too, and I love the early black and whites. And I love John Daly. I think John Daly is, in the history of those panel shows, the best host.
I disagree. I think he was just really stiff, but that's just me. And also, just imagine him as a panelist in the 70s on Match Game.
Yeah, that would have been great. And a lot of those guys who hosted those panel shows did end up at some point, you know, being on those on Match Game. Match Game started out as a panel show. Gene Rayburn himself appeared on a ton of panel shows in the 60s, late 50s and early 60s as well. So, hey, Greg, thanks for the call, man. All right, 630 area code says Pat Sajak has been hosting since 1981. So Sajak's been hosting since 1980. That's a long time, man. That is a long time to be hosting that show. So when he was hosting in 1981, I still think that they were doing the stupid shopping. I just remember when Chuck Woolery hosted it that they did the stupid shopping. But I guess, Pat Sajak had to make the contestants shop for crap in this. Here's a porcelain Dalmatian for $45. That's worth $45 for $4,500. 815 area code, let's make a deal with Monty Hall. Let's make a deal with Monty Hall. Classic. Classic. And now Wayne Brady. Is Wayne Brady going to have to choke a bitch? Is now the host. and he's got that wacky sidekick guy. You ever watch that, Dan?
Here and there.
I can't remember the wacky sidekick's name, but he's wacky, and he's a sidekick, and he's always, like, trying to be funny. And if, you know, there was a documentary about, you know, about game shows and stuff, and they mentioned Let's Make a Deal, and there's no rhyme or reason why they make the contestants dress up. So, because they all, even on Let's Make a Deal, you wear a costume. It's like it's a Halloween thing. And so there, I guess people started to come dressed up, and then I guess they said, okay, now everybody's pretty much got to dress up, because they wanted to get Monty's attention. That's why they would dress up in these outlandish costumes. Even when it first started, it wasn't like a costume game, but they wanted to get Monty's attention so that they would do a deal with him. So that's how it started.
Smart. Jonathan Mangum is the announcer
he's
for Let's
Wacky. He's a wacky dude, Dan. Let me just say that to you. Every once in a while, I'll watch a little bit of Let's Make a Deal before Price is Right, you know, before the yodeling dude falls off the mountain and I go to bed. I usually watch a little bit of Price is Right. 312 area code says, my wife always watches General Hospital, which segues into Jeopardy. When I'm good at the question, she refuses to acknowledge my vast knowledge. Instead, she says I'm old and that's how I know stuff. So General Hospital is one of the few soap operas that's still on. I think my mom watches The Young and the Restless still. I think that one's still on. I don't know. Hey, I don't care because all my children's gone. I don't care about any of it anymore. 847 area code says, what about High Rollers with Alex Trebek, sorry, and Ruta Lee? They had a great drum beat intro to that show. I'm telling you, man, it's a whole different world when you hear a game show theme. I mean, really, immediately when you hear that, you go, that's a game show theme. Even without knowing what the piece of music is, as soon as you hear it, you go, that's a game show theme. 312 says, love the Newlywed Game, of course. 773 area code says that my dogs get excited when the final Jeopardy music plays because they know it's dinner time. Okay, and then Peter Indicator says, a bar I once frequented would switch the TV at the bar to Jeopardy every day at 4:30, and they would turn off the jukebox. All along the bar, you could see the TV, including the waitress and the bartender. They would yell out the answer. Then for final Jeopardy question, we consult each other for a collective answer. That's very similar to what I was saying about Simon's. Very, very similar. But the final Jeopardy was for money. So, anyway. All right. More game show talk coming up after the news, which is after this. Two for Tuesday. Yeah! And this is our latest Two for Tuesday is Ernie requesting Annette Funicello with It's Really Love. Yesterday was her birthday. Oh, okay. Hey, welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline Studio Tuesday morning, and we're here till 5 a.m., and we've been talking about game shows and some of our favorites and some of the weirdest ones. And Dan's been playing back some theme songs from the game shows, some relatively obscure ones as well. So, Dan, you got another one for me? Let's see how I do on this one. And then I'll ask for a hint if I won't know it. Jeez. That sounds like a, you know, like a weird, like circus music. Who was what? What's the deal on this one?
Oh, hang on one second, Mike. Let me pull that back up.
Here. Okay. I don't recognize it right away. It sounds a little weird to me, but maybe with a couple of clues, I'll be able to guess what it is.
This aired in 1975.
Okay.
hosted by Art James.
Art James.
Art James.
Oh, okay.
Johnny Gilbert was your announcer.
Mm-hmm. And it was on in 1 year, just 1 year in 1975?
Just 1 year.
Okay.
Was American. Was on NBC.
Mm-hmm. Oh. Don't know. What's the name of that one?
The Magnificent Marble Machine.
Oh, I do remember that now. The Magnificent Marble Machine. Yeah, I do remember that. It was like a giant pinball machine.
Right.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I used to watch that. I remember watching that now because I was upset. I loved pinball when I was a kid. So, how about Treasure Hunt? Do you remember Treasure Hunt? No, this is before your time. Treasure Hunt was Jeff. What the hell was his name? Jeff, and he spells it G-E-O-F-F. Jeff. I can't remember. Edwards. Jeff Edwards, maybe. He was the host. It was Treasure Hunt, and what you would do was, he would pick somebody from out of the audience, and there'd be a whole bunch of boxes on stage of different size, and like gift boxes, like wrapped up packages of different sizes, big ones, small ones, all over the place. And then you would go up and you would pick one, and then he would tempt you with other offers, kind of like Let's Make a Deal. And then he would open up the box and you would find out what you won. And in there was like a check for $50,000 or something. It was like, so, yeah, and then there were zonks, you know, like on Let's Make a Deal, when you get a zonk, you know, like, the, you know, I like the zonks on Let's Make a Deal. Like, oh, behind curtain number three, wow, it's a jalopy. And then it's like a car, and there's a guy dressed up like a hobo, you know, sitting in it. But that Treasure Hunt, Jeff Edwards, I want to say, was his name.
It was Jeff Edwards, yes.
Okay. You remember Studs?
Do.
Yeah.
I was not supposed to be watching that show.
Oh, yeah, it was a little risque. I mean, that was on like in 91. You were like 10 years old or something. Yeah, you shouldn't be watching Studs. You know, Mark DiCarlo, friend to this radio station,
yes,
was the host of that show. That show was really popular for a while. It was a really popular show, and it was ridiculous. Tattletales, a classic, with one of the greatest themes of all time. One of the greatest theme songs of all time, Tattletales. It's fantastic. And that was Burt Convy was the host, the great Burt Convy. And the idea was, it was celebrity couples, they were celebrity married couples, and they would separate them. Like in the first part of the show, the girls would be backstage with headphones on, and they would be in front of a camera, and they would show up on the TV screen in front of their husbands, who would be in the studio. They would ask questions of the husbands and the wives, and then they would turn off the TV feed of the women in the back. And the guys would try to answer the way that their wives would answer, and then they bring the wives back one at a time to answer it, and then they reverse it for the second half. The guys are backstage and the girls are out front. And that was supposed to, you were supposed to get like really great gossip and insight into the famous marriages of Hollywood stars. Bobby Van and Elaine Joyce were on that show a lot. Bobby Van and Elaine Joyce. Bobby Van was the host of Make Me Laugh. The original Make Me Laugh. Gallagher was on that show on Make Me Laugh. I'm trying to remember if he smashed watermelons in the studio. I don't remember, but I remember, yeah, he was on the show. Guys like Kip Adada, Bruce Baum, who used to do Baby Man, Gary Shandling was on Make Me Laugh. Gary Mule Deer. Because I watched it every night. I watched Make Me Laugh every single night. And those were like the classic guys that were on, you know, that were on the show. And then they brought that show back a few times. But it's still one of my favorites, Elaine Joyce, man. She was on. She and Bobby Van were on Tattletales all the time. And then Elaine Joyce was a semi-regular on Match Game. And, of course, one of my favorite stories ever is that Elaine Joyce had a brief relationship with J.D. Salinger. This is an absolutely true story. J.D. Salinger, the author of Catcher in the Rye, the shut-in, the guy who disappeared, from society, would watch Match Game. He would watch Match Game, and Elaine Joyce was a very vivacious, you know, beautiful woman, and so he took a liking to her, and so he called up CBS, like J.D. called up CBS and said that he wanted to get in contact with Elaine Joyce. And then it happened. But, I mean, that's like the best opening line ever. if you're trying to pick up a woman, and your opening line is "Hi, I'm the author of Catcher in the Rye," you're going to get lucky. That you're going to get a date out of that. If you call somebody up and go, "How you doing? I'm J.D. Salinger. I wrote Catcher in the Rye." "All right, I'll be over in 15 minutes." And so she had a brief relationship with J.D. Salinger, which is one of my favorite stories ever. The thing that I love most about that story is that J.D. Salinger watched Match Game. That's the detail that's so fantastic about that. The guy who wrote my favorite book of all time, one of the most seminal works of literature in the history of the world, watched Match Game. And then Elaine Joyce ended up with Neil Simon. So apparently she liked writers. All right, here's Glenn on WGN. Hi, Glenn.
Hi, Nick.
Hey,
I was thinking about the game Press Your Luck,
right?
The whammies.
Yeah.
But more importantly, how about the guy who figured out the rhythm, so he actually won, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Yeah. Yeah. They did a whole documentary about that. And, you know, technically, the guy didn't cheat, Glenn. He videotaped it on three. He had, like, three different videotape recorders. He taped it, and then he memorized the pattern of the big board. And
exactly. It goes back to, the $64,000 question. That was a big cheat. That was in that situation.
Interesting. All right, Glenn, thanks.
Sure.
Okay, take care. Yeah, but that's you know, the guy didn't cheat, though. I got to say, and CBS couldn't do anything about it. He did not cheat. He watched the game, and he memorized, he learned what the pattern was so that he wouldn't get any whammies. And he started out, he was all slick, Dan, when he started out. Started out getting two whammies right away.
Oh.
You know what I mean?
Just to
throw the scent off a little
nervous.
Bit.
Nervous.
Yeah. So he did that on purpose, and then he went on. He was the only contestant in the history of that show to be on 2 days in a row because he kept winning and winning. He kept winning. And by the way, the host of that show was Peter Tamarkin. And because this footage is available on YouTube, this is a legendary story. I can't remember the guy's name. He was like an ice cream guy. He drove an ice cream truck. And he was always trying to do get rich quick schemes. He was obsessed with them. He wanted to make fast money, and he would enter contests, and he would do weird things all in order to try and get some fast money.
Michael Larson.
Michael Larson was his name. Bearded guy. And he was married, and then. So he memorizes this thing. He gets on the show, and he just kills it. He's just like he amasses the most money that they've ever had on the show. He stayed 2 days, and he walked out with like hundreds of thousands of dollars and prizes and vacations, and all kinds of stuff. And then his life went to crap, like a lot of like that stuff. I mean, he was a pretty screwed up guy in the first place. But then he lost all the dough. He got divorced. He lost his house, and it turned out to be kind of a sad story. But that footage of him on the show is fascinating to watch him and to Peter Tamarkin's reaction to this guy just keep getting more and more money and no whammies and more money. He just, at one point, he just gives up and he's like, "I don't even know what to say." It is hilarious to watch. And the thing that the person who owns the rights to the movie is Bill Murray. And I don't know why they haven't made the movie. Because now Bill Murray is much older than that guy was when he was on, and he was going to play the part. But that would be a fascinating movie, because the documentary that they did, because Game Show Network did like a full hour documentary telling that guy's story, showing the entire episodes that he was on and all the behind the scenes stuff. And they interviewed everybody who was associated with the show and friends and family members of this guy. He had passed away by the time that they did this documentary. I mean, it's really a fascinating story. And one of the most legendary things that's ever happened on a game show. And again, the guy did not cheat. He did not. He got around the system, man. So, all right. Let's take a break, and then we'll come back. And after we break here, we got weather, and then we'll do a commercial break here, and we'll come back, and we'll wrap it up. If you guys want to jump in with your game shows and your favorites and your memories at 312-981-7200. Again, try to win that house on Wheel of Fortune, man. Jimmy Buffett's waiting for you. People who are just waking up have no idea what I'm talking about. And you can play pickleball with Jimmy Buffett. This is our last two for Tuesday for the morning. Yeah, we'll do it again next Tuesday. Ernie requesting Annette Funicello with Pineapple Princess. Oh, because it was her birthday yesterday. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We've been talking about game shows because the Wheel of Fortune is going to be giving away a house for the first time ever. That's what we've been talking about. So we got a bunch of texts here and some other game show memories that we're going to remember here. Then coming up at 5 o'clock is Steve Grzanich with the opening bell. And at 6 is Steve Cochran. And coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN Radio. Okay, let's talk to Frank from Naperville on WGN. Hi, Frank.
Morning, Nick.
Morning.
One of the game shows that I loved, it was actually two of them, but the one that I really loved was called Tick Tack Doe with Wink Martindale.
Good old Wink awesome Martindale. Guy. Yeah, good old Wink Martindale. That Tick Tack Doe where you had to stay away from the dragon.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
And the Joker's Wild.
Yeah, those were on back-to-back on Channel 32. Jack Barry.
Right.
Jack Barry was the host of Joker's Wild. Now there's a new version of Joker's Wild. Are you aware of this, Frank?
With Snoop Dogg, I don't think it does the classic justice.
No, Snoop Dogg hosting the Joker's Wild.
That's right. That's right.
It's ridiculous. Yeah. No, Tic Tac Toe is great, and Wink Martindale. One of the guys who brought Elvis to one of the guys who first introduced Elvis to America.
Nice.
Was a great DJ and a great host and a fantastic game show host, and he also has one of the greatest names ever.
Yep.
Yeah. All right, Frank.
Thanks. Nick.
Take care, buddy.
All right.
Yeah, Wink Martindale. That's a name right there. All right, 630 area code says, my mom went to high school with Gene Rayburn. He was voted class clown. Of course. You know, he's from the area. Gene Rayburn is from the Chicagoland area. 773 area code says that Margaritaville Housing Network was a sponsor of the U.S. Open Pickleball Championships. How have I not ever heard of pickleball and there are the U.S. Open Pickleball Championships?
Give it 2 years.
Wow. Let's see. Emo says Classic Concentration with Alex Trebek, which they are, by the way, rerunning those in the afternoon on Buzzer. And those are pretty classic. 847 area code says, Nick, the Honeymooners $99,000 answer episode is a classic. Yeah, that's the best. Ralph can't answer the first question, which is the tune Swanee River, and that's the tune that Norton warms up, that plays to warm up. And that's and then he says, the texter says, bang, zoom. That is a great episode, classic. 231 area code says, when I watch old episode of the Newlywed Games, from the 60s, I often wonder, where did they find these people? I just think that's true. I just think that's true of, like, anybody who showed up on the Newlywed Game. 84815 area code again. He says, I like Tic-Tac-Doe with Wink Martindale. Wink Martindale getting a lot of love here late in the show. 630 area code says, the new Family Feud with Steve Harvey is a killer. The thing about that, and I think Steve Harvey does a great job. I really do. I think Steve Harvey is a great host on Family Feud. I really do. But the answers are getting a little bit more sexual and vulgar. And, you know, I don't want to sound like a prude, but they don't need, I mean, there's all kinds of genitalia jokes that they're throwing around on Family Feud. The first word in the title of the show is family. You know what I'm saying? I really don't think some of those. I remember some of the answers. I'm like, come on, man. The same thing with Match Game. Match Game's the same way. The new versions. 224 area. Can you believe me? I'm being a prude, Dan. Me.
You're right, though.
Captain Sex and Violence, and swearing.
They'll all agree with you at the Margaritaville Complex in a couple years.
That's the. You've already got me moving down there, huh?
Well, I mean, you know, I know your pickleball skills.
That's right. 224 area code said, he used to play along with Are You Smarter Than a Fifth Grader with Jeff Foxworthy. That's another show that made me feel like a complete moron. You know, that was a good show, though. I like that show. I'm not a big Jeff Foxworthy guy. If you've got a TV on top of a TV that's broken, you might be a redneck. Mike says, I've always loved the theme to the $1.98 beauty show.
Yes, it's a $1.98 beauty show. An entertainment spectacular if ever there was one, where beauty is not only in the eyes of the beholder, but also on this very stage. Tonight, the $1.98 beauty show will continue its relentless spoof of all of those other so-called beauty contests. And although this is not a real contest, we will bring you our version of the All-American Beauty, that one-of-a-kind girl who not only has personality and poise, but beauty and talent as well.
Yeah.
Yes, sir, the
$1.98 beauty show, another from the brain, another brainchild from Chuck Barris. But we can end on a high note because the host of that show, the one, the only, the genius that is Rip Taylor. one of the funniest men that ever walked the planet, Rip Taylor. That show was ridiculous, too. So, Dan, we got musicians coming in tomorrow, right?
Guys from Andrezza's Mustache, yeah, for their annual Halloween gig.
Yeah, we'll find out what they're playing. A couple of my buddies will be coming in. Again, I think we may even be speaking with Phil and Gotti.
Yes,
tonight, two mornings in a row. Yeah. All right, we're going to take a break. The news is coming up. And then after the news is the opening bell with Steve Grzanich.